is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! Fires down the middle. It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White! He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy, much to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
I got a big show today, big Wednesday show, coming to you live from One Bills Drive on what we thought could be a snow day. Never happened, Donald. Were you disappointed?
I woke up this morning.
Did you have your nose pressed up against the window pane looking for the snow?
I woke up and saw sunlight, and I'm like, you know what? It didn't snow last night.
It did not snow. We all left here yesterday saying, maybe a snow day tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
We're all looking for it.
You know, I go to the school once I leave here, you know, from after school program, and I'm like, oh, man, we're going to have a total snow day tomorrow. None.
Nothing. I had it all planned out, what I was going to wear for the snow day, what I was going to read, what I was going to watch on TV.
What didn't you were going to wear?
You know, which sweat clothes was going to be.
Okay, got you.
Which lounge wear, you know, I was going to wear all day. Yeah, I had it all figured out. Never happened. We're here. We're here until 3 with a good show, and who knew it was going to be a snow day? We got Chris Brown standing by, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, just off the practice field where the Bills are getting set for the Miami Dolphins. We got at 12:30 Armando Salguero from the Miami Herald, the always interesting and sometimes caustic columnist who covers the Miami Dolphins. Speaking of caustic at times, Thurman Thomas, former Dolphin, joins us at 1 o'clock. We will remind him of that, and he might get Thurman going a little bit. He'll be joining us at 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
After practice today, we're going to hear from Jordan Poyer, Bill's safety. Jordan Poyer is going to join us in studio. We'll hear from Tyrod Taylor at the podium and LaShawn Shady McCoy at the podium. So a lot of ground to cover, a lot of interaction with you as well. Welcome to the show. Chris Brown, welcome to the show.
We should come up with some fast questions that he has to answer, like – best food, best
Thurman?
Weather.
Yeah.
Best food, best weather, best night scene, best whatever.
Love
for
it.
Thurman.
Yeah.
Between Buffalo and Miami. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I think he's literally had the cup of coffee in Miami. Chris, how long was Thurman there? Well, like a full season, but he didn't play
that. It was 1 year. Yeah, he didn't play much.
Yeah.
Because didn't he do his ACL again? And then that was it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Chris Brown is in studio with us, Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, as we get you set up for the Bills and the Dolphins. We're both keeping an eye on practice out there, Chris. And, of course, the quarterback question looms large over everything. Look, the fact that the Bills have not signed a quarterback leads me to believe that they're pretty confident they're going to get Tyrod Taylor back on the field this Sunday, right?
Yeah, it's certainly looking that way. You know, Coach McDermott reiterated today that when healthy, Tyrod's our starter. And I have to say, just watching him out there in practice, is an hour earlier today. They moved the schedule up, which is why I'm sitting here with you guys and not out there right now. And Tyrod is moving significantly better than he was last week. Last week he could barely put any weight on his left leg. Now he's doing rollouts off that left leg, throwing with accuracy. He doesn't seem to be demonstrating any favoritism towards his left leg, where he's compensating more with his right leg. He looks like he has his both legs under him just fine. And so I think as long as we continue on this course, he's going to start Sunday. And for that matter, Peterman was taking the individual position drill reps right behind him, and Joe Webb was over with the receivers. So I think that's a good sign, too, you know, with Peterman now in step 4 of the return to participation protocol. He's only got a couple of more tests he's got to pass, and he could very well be medically cleared by as early as tomorrow or Friday. I think he's kind of in a similar boat to that of Tre'Davious White last week.
Let me let's talk about concussion protocol for a minute or two, Chris, because it's a relatively new development, right, in the NFL. I believe this is the second, third year they've done this. And I think there is some misunderstanding about the amount and nature of information that can be released by the team when a player is in concussion protocol. Sean McDermott, even this morning, would get asked about Peterman's status and is he doing this, is he doing that. Basically, they are limited as to what they can say or do, or even the contact they have with players in concussion protocol, correct?
Right. They basically have to take their cue from the medical staff and from the athletic training staff in terms of what the status is of said player, in this case, Nate Peterman. And they basically take that and apply it to practice if he's allowed to do so. Again, you know, you have step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, 5 being full medical clearance, right now, Peterman, just by virtue of the fact that he's back on the practice field, you know he's in step four, because you cannot return to any form of football-related activities until you've cleared step three. So once you see him back on the practice field, you know automatically he's in step four. Now he's just got a couple of more tests to pass before he gets full medical clearance. Now, I will say this. There have been instances where players get to step four, participate on a non-contact basis in practice, and then do not pass the test and have to go back to square one because symptoms return. You kind of go through the whole process again. That's exactly what happened to Indianapolis Colts center Ryan Kelly last week. He was back on the practice field participating, had the last couple of tests to pass, did not pass those, and went from not even being on the injury report to out on Saturday, and he did not play in the game Sunday.
Yeah. You know, you can get out there on the field, and once you step, because when you're not on the field, everything is it's normal. But when you get out on the field and things are moving fast and you're trying to, you know, zone in on certain things, it can bring those symptoms back, you
right.
know. And so it can happen to a lot of different players. But early in those steps, they have to go see an independent neurologist,
yes.
right?
And the independent neurologist is involved in the full medical clearance step as well. Once you get to step five, he passes the tests. The independent neurologist, to my understanding, reviews those as well to give his stamp of approval on it also. So he's not only cleared by the team, he has to be cleared by an independent neurologist, too.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, in studio with us. If you have comments or questions for Chris, he'll be with us for a couple of minutes. We're going to introduce you to our Twitter poll in a moment or two at 803-0550, the number to call if you'd like to make a comment or a question outside Buffalo. Toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. On the quarterback question, Chris, Sean McDermott now for the second consecutive week has said, when healthy, Tyrod is our starter. What do you think the qualification is there? Why is he being so careful? I'm reluctant to ask this because he's careful in everything he says, but why do you think McDermott's been so careful about the wording, when healthy, Tyrod is our starter?
Well, I just think it's because he feels if he has to make a decision that is in the best interest of the player's health and sit him like he had to last week, I think that comment, the way he phrases that, reserves that right for him. And I think that's really all it boils down to, really, at least as I see it.
He's unwilling to extend it beyond a week-to-week basis, though.
Well, that hasn't changed in the last month. Yeah, it hasn't changed since L.A. Chargers right. week. So I don't see any reason why that's going to suddenly change. I really think it was just a statement to give himself the out if Tyrod, let's just say, for example, he has a setback in practice on Thursday or Friday, and suddenly he becomes a major question mark. And now, you know, it's a little dicey as to whether it's safe to play him. You know, you have to reserve the right to save the player from himself almost, pull him from the lineup, and then put the other guy in.
But, you know, some coaches will say he's our starter and leave it at that.
Right.
Sean's been pretty emphatic about this week, he's
healthy,
which I understand. I mean, I know what's going on around here, and I'm sure he's reluctant to paint himself in any kind of a corner. But it seems almost like he throws doubt on his status when he says that, doesn't it, a little?
That's what it does seem like that. You can – and probably a lot of fans look at it the same way. Like, he's not saying he's our starter moving forward.
Right.
He's just saying this week is our starter if healthy.
Right.
I don't know.
Okay. Because everything he says will get picked apart.
Right. I didn't read quite that much into it.
Okay.
Did he say this week today?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. I thought he said when healthy, Tyrod's our starter. I thought that's what he said.
Maybe he didn't say this week today.
I don't think he said this week today.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have the soundbite. Let's play it. Sean McDermott earlier today, 9:30 news conference, asked about his quarterback situation, and here's what he had to say.
We got close. Yeah, we got close.
Nope. Wrong one. We're looking for Sean McDermott number one. I hope we have that one. Sean McDermott on the quarterback situation and whether Tyrod is the starter. Here's what he had to say.
When healthy, Tyrod will be our starter. We're still he's made some progress. He'll get most of the work today in practice. Not quite all the work, though.
So at this point, with Nate in concussion protocol, can we assume Joe Webb's going to have to be your number two guy for now?
At this point, correct.
Is Nate still in concussion protocol? At
yes.
At any point, has he been okay? Has he made that step to be able to practice yet?
You know, as part of the concussion protocol process, he'll be out at practice, but he is not out of that protocol yet.
So So he's going to test his arm. I guess he'll be participating in practice.
He's in the concussion protocol.
Sean McDermott earlier today. That is my bet. He didn't say this week, but I guess when he says at this point a couple of times, it's a bit of a qualifier. Not a big deal. You're right. I'm sorry to bring it up.
That's okay.
Chris Brown.
You know, it's a tough spot that they're in, especially with practice reps out there on the field, because you have Tyrod, who's, you know, dealing with this knee thing. And like you said, you know, Tyrod, he and you've been talking about it, he looks good out there, but they have to make sure that he gets enough reps if he's going to go. But then if he has a setback or something like that during the week, you got to make sure that, I guess, Joe Webb right now would be your backup, you know, depending on what happens with Nate Peterman the rest of the week. So you need him to get some reps, right? So it's a tough position that they're in, trying to split these reps
yeah.
between you
I
guys.
Guess what I'm really asking now that I rethink it, Chris and Donald, is how much pressure do you think Sean McDermott feels internally, his own desire to see more of Nathan Peterman? Do you think that's a factor in these final three games? And my belief is, as long as they're still alive in the playoff hunt, he probably will not disrupt that again as he did a month ago at Los Angeles. But I wonder how much of him thinks – I want to win. I want to get to the playoffs, but I'd really like to get a look at Nathan again.
I would think internally he wants to get a good look at Nathan, and he didn't get that chance this week because of the weather, really.
Last
you know,
week
so
count.
I would think internally he wants to really get a good look at Nathan, but he also has to take the temperature of the room and all of that stuff. Not divide the locker room by putting this kid in after he had that game out in L.A. You know, so it's internally it's probably eating him up a little bit because he does want to see Nate, but at the same time, he feels like, you know, this would be best for our team right now, Tyrod Taylor being the starter if he's healthy.
What do you think, Chris?
I think it's tied to where the team is at, chiefly. You know, they're still in this thing, so Tyrod gets the nod. If that changes and they fall out of contention, and, you know, I think it could very easily change because I think they do want to see more of what Peterman has to offer. And I don't think last week was a complete throwaway. Yeah, he got injured. He had to leave the game in the third quarter. But I like the way he threw the ball in the weather conditions. I'll say that. Granted, going with the wind more than against it. But I don't think Brissett looked super either. He had some good throws, though, in the weather conditions too. So, you know, I think there's still stuff you can take from that game when Peterman was in it. And I thought he made some pretty good throws, two of the best going to Benjamin there on the touchdown drive. So there's stuff you can still pull from that game. I think there's stuff that you can get from Peterman's development and make some assessments. Sliding would be the lesson that he's going to have to take from that game. Because once you declare yourself as a runner, the only thing left to protect you as a quarterback is the slide. So he should slide.
You feel like that's something that a lot of these younger quarterbacks need to learn coming into the league? I feel like we see a lot of these younger –
They'll learn real fast.
Yeah, I mean, when they get hit, they'll learn fast. But I feel like you see a lot of these younger quarterbacks, when they get drafted, they don't know how to slide. Like, they're not sliding in college anymore. I don't know.
I don't know why that happens. It does take some time. And it's really – not only is it good protection, but it's strategic protection. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To know that you can
slide. Yeah, live for another play.
Yeah.
It's a business decision.
Yeah.
What are you doing right now, man? You have to learn how to slide. You got to protect yourself. If you are the quarterback, you are, you know, the face of the franchise. That team needs you, you know, and so you have to know how to slide.
We're with Chris Brown, Bills Insider. A couple more minutes here. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. The other injury of note, we talked about quarterbacks a lot, Chris. Calvin Benjamin, who aggravated his right knee injury in the game against the Colts on Sunday. What did you see of him out there? What do you think of his status? He was going to be limited today going
Yeah, on. Limited today, and he might be very limited. You know, he did go through stretch, did some individual position drill work, was not at full speed, though, and then spent about 10 minutes, probably 5 minutes of the media viewing portion of practice talking with the head athletic trainer, Sean Gibson, you know, probably about how he's feeling. And after that, pretty much did some straight line jogging, 30 yards one way, 30 yards the other way, while the other receivers were running routes with quarterbacks on air. So I think it's going to be a slow and steady process this week. I don't think his knee's going to be right the rest of the year, you know, with that torn meniscus in there. I think it's going to be very touch and go this week as to what he does. You know, in talking to him, what he did last week to aggravate it again was he kind of hyperextended his leg again because the footing was so poor.
Mm-hmm.
And his leg kind of slipped out from under him, and he hyperextended it again. And, you know, it's the forecast is rain, 37 on Sunday. I mean, if the field conditions are suspect again, I think that could certainly weigh into, especially if it's a game-time decision, yeah, whether he plays or not.
Yeah, I mean, just from the part of it's raining, my knee is feeling bad. You know, that really does go into it. But it's not really – it's not going to be easy for him to play on a field that doesn't have good conditions, you know, because any time you have a lower body injury and you're playing on the snow like they were, you know, there's a high risk just playing football. But when you have those conditions, there's high risk for something bad to happen, and that's what happened.
And, you know – there's a whole bunch of different scenarios you could have in terms of if he is up, what does he do? Maybe he just plays when you hit the red zone. You know, maybe there's a third down package that you put him on the field for. If he's, in fact, you know, going to be able to, you know, get himself out there but only play 10, 15 plays for you, well, pick what those plays are and have a package of plays, you know, drawn up for him in the game plan, because he is that kind of a weapon, as we saw last week.
I say red zone. I say you have to have him in the red zone because, you know, he is dangerous at 6'5", 6'6". You know, you can throw the ball up to him. If you want to throw a fade route, which we've seen them throw, especially with Peterman in the game, the last two games, you want to throw it, he's the guy you want to throw it to, you know. So, yeah, you want to use him in the rest of the field, but if you can get down to that area, the red zone, you need to use them down there.
Kelvin Benjamin brings up, gets us right into our Twitter poll and his value in the red zone. His couple of catches against the Colts last week makes him an important part of this question. We want to get your thoughts on that. On Twitter, we posed the question, which new Bills player will have the biggest impact down the stretch? You can interpret new any way you want. New starter, new addition to the roster, new face. I mean, you can go right to Cap Cappy if you want. Just a couple of weeks, just like saying that. A couple of weeks onto the roster, Cap Cappy. Which new Bills player will have the most impact on this team going down the stretch? That's our Twitter poll. It's been up for a little while. You're welcome to ring us up on the telephone line. Tell us what you think at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Calvin Benjamin, the leader in the clubhouse, 60% of you say Calvin Benjamin as a new addition after sitting out with his injury. And, of course, he was only acquired back on Halloween. 60% of you say Calvin Benjamin will have the biggest impact down the stretch. 28% say the new starter at linebacker, Matt Milano, will have the biggest impact. 6% say Deontay Thompson, the receiver who joined the Bills, a month or two ago, will have the biggest impact. And somebody, 6% have somebody else in mind. It could be who? Eddie Yarbrough would be a candidate, I think, for biggest impact.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What we saw, Chris, from Calvin Benjamin last Sunday in the limited work he's had, now he's got, two games and a little bit less than a quarter. It's pretty exciting when you think about Calvin Benjamin next year, healthy, with whoever is a quarterback, being sort of a centerpiece of whatever the Buffalo passing attack looks like next year.
Right. I think the rest of the way, though, it's probably Milano. You know, now he's going to be a starter. He's going to be on the field more, which was the case last week. He got the second most snaps he's got all season, you know, short of the time against Oakland when he got 52 snaps, filling in for Humber, who was out with the thumb injury. Guy steps on the field as a starter last week, and he's the leading tackler in the game. I just think he gets to places a lot faster than most. I think his skill set is the prototype for the type of defense that Coach McDermott runs, which is lighter, faster linebacker who can cover just about anybody, and he fits that prototype. And as Coach McDermott said today, he feels that each time Milano takes the field, he's getting a little bit better. He doesn't make the same mistakes twice. So the arrow is definitely pointing up for Milano, and seeing the kind of impact he can have when he is a starter, when he's in the starting lineup, whether it's last week with the 11 tackles, whether it's the Oakland game where he's returning a fumble 40 yards for a touchdown, I vote Milano.
You know, I had a conversation with Sean McDermott about Milano the other day, and we both agreed, you know, his baptism of fire, the Falcons game, right? That was, I believe, the first game he really played or got significant playing time.
Right, that's 1st. The game that Humber got hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looked lost that day. He looked really lost and overwhelmed at times. He's come a long way in the 2 months since, you know.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, that's part of the learning curve that any rookie will go through. Some get through it faster than others. But, you know, this is a guy that his first year in college at BC, he was a safety.
Safety, yeah.
So he had to make a lot of these calls. And then as linebacker, he had to make a lot of calls once he moved closer to the line of scrimmage in his later years of college. So I think this is a guy that knows schemes, can read keys, and react.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more comfortable he gets seeing the different things that NFL offenses can throw at him is going to be an even more instinctive player than he is already.
I think I have to agree with Chris on this one, Milano, especially this week. And watching the Dolphins play on Monday night, and we've talked about the Dolphins, they just have a lot of weapons on the outside, you know. And they have Kenyon Drake, who can catch the ball out of the backfield. He's a good running back, you know. And so you're going to need Milano out there, not only for tackles, but in coverage, because they have a Julius Thomas who can get down the field, and they like to throw the ball to him, or whoever's playing in the slot for them at that point who Milano would have to cover. You know, I think he's important to this defense, especially with his coverage ability.
Yeah, I might vote for Milano too, but let's hear from you if you have a thought on that. Which newcomer would have the biggest impact down the stretch for the Bills? 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Deion Dawkins, Chris, does not qualify as a newcomer. Maybe he does. He's a rookie and a fairly recent starter. I think Deion Dawkins has emerged maybe right behind Tre'Davious White at the head of the class for this rookie class the Bills have this year. He's been a starter now for, what, 5-6 weeks in a row? And he gets better every week. He's almost dominant, including on McCoy's touchdown run against the Colts the other day.
Right, and he'll get on me for this. He doesn't pass the eyeball test. but, I mean, that's a guy that can move.
Yeah.
Like, just looking at him, you'd say, does he have good feet? Does he have movement skills? He does. He's very light on his feet. He's just shaped like a refrigerator box.
Yeah.
you know, so that's a guy that, yeah, he's doing a heck of a job over there. And I think I've been most impressed with his pass protection, maybe more than anything else.
Yes.
Just his ability to go against the best pass rusher the other team has to offer and steer players wide. He's really good at doing that. And, you know, in the run game, I think he's effective. I don't think he's outstanding and, oh, my gosh, you know, pancaking people. But he's effective and he's consistent. And you look at where Buffalo's run game has very quietly gone the last 3 weeks. They're sixth in the league right now in rushing. And I think you can give some of that credit to Deion Dawkins being in the lineup and every week now where he's able to kind of get some traction and advance his game, you know, getting those reps every single week.
You know, I think playing him early in the season, even though they were rotating he and Cordy Glenn, playing him early when he was facing a Von Miller, when he was facing the better defensive, you know, ends in the game early in the season, that really helped him out, you know. And so now he's kind of gotten his footing as he's had a few weeks now as a starter. He's got his footing in there. He's going to have to still get better every week, you know, but I think he's gotten a lot better. He's getting better every week, and I think he needs to even get better this week. As I'm going to continue and talk about, the defensive front for the Miami Dolphins is probably the strongest part of their defense, you know, with those pass rushers that they have. So they're going to need Deion to play well this week.
8 starts for Dawkins, including the last 5. And Donald brings up the matchup, Chris, and I don't know what to expect from the Miami Dolphins. You know, when you look at this season they've had, 5 straight losses that just streaked and ended a couple of weeks ago, 3 straight wins earlier on, some quality wins, including one over Atlanta, just like the Bills, and some head-scratching losses. I don't know what we're going to get when the Bills line up to play the Dolphins this Sunday.
Yeah, they're a very streaky team. I don't think there's any question about that, so it's hard to get a handle on just what you're going to get. And you almost have to be a little encouraged that they played lights out on Monday night, because maybe you get the opposite on Sunday.
Yeah.
But I think that win has kind of galvanized that team. They feel like, hey, you know what? We still got a shot at this thing at 6-7 in a very jumbled AFC playoff picture. And there is talent there. And while Cutler can drop dimes with the best of them, he can also very easily throw 3 interceptions in a game. So I think he's kind of the personification of the team this year. And they've gone through a lot of stuff, too. You know, they've jettisoned quality players off their roster also, Jay Ajayi being the most notable one. But there's some talent on that team, and I was interested with the game plan they turned to last week against New England. A lot of people would argue that the secondary is probably the strongest part of New England's defense. They challenged that immediately. Instead of going two tight end sets like they had for most of the past 5 or 6 weeks, they went four wide almost the whole game. And it was successful. I mean, they chewed up that New England secondary, primarily because New England doesn't have a pass rush, especially without Trey Flowers in the lineup, and he was out again this past Monday night. So kudos to the game planning of Adam Gase and his offensive staff, because they had just the right thing dialed up for that New England defense. And, you know, New England kind of laid an egg, too. They didn't play their best, so that only exacerbated the situation and made Miami look all the better.
Let's take one phone call while Chris remains with us. William in Jamestown. Go ahead, William. Welcome to the show.
Brown, specifically about Deion Dawkins and then the possibly move on and possibly trade Cordy Glenn maybe during draft time.
Yeah, yeah. That's a chance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, they may have already moved on from Cordy Glenn, to be honest with you.
There hasn't been any hurry to get him back on the field. I think that's due in part to the fact that Dawkins has played as well as he has. Clearly, Dawkins is a part of this team's future. They don't have any problem playing him at left tackle. Cordy Glenn is the highest paid player on the team in terms of average annual salary. Well, you know, you've got some cap space to move. You know, you have a lot of cap space. You want to move some more. He's probably the guy that's first on your list, right or wrong. I still maintain that Cordy Glenn's a very good player. But if you feel like Deion Dawkins can be your left tackle for the next 10 years, I could see why you would see Cordy Glenn as expendable. And there are going to be teams in the market for a quality left tackle, and that's what Cordy Glenn is. So be interesting to see what they would want in return. I know they were talking to Seattle a few months ago. They have since addressed their left tackle position with Dwayne Moore, you know, in a transaction that they pulled off with the Houston Texans right before the trade deadline. But, you know, I still think there are going to be teams out there looking for left tackle type talent. And, oh, by the way, Cordy Glenn's 27 years old. I mean, he's got a lot of years left in this league, provided those foot and ankle problems can be solved. And I think that's going to be the rub. Teams around the league who might be interested in Cordy Glenn are going to be going through that physical with a fine-tooth comb to make sure what they're getting is a commodity that can stay on the field for 16 games, and that this season was an aberration for Cordy Glenn, not the rule.
Could there be a no rush to get Cordy back on the field because they want to make sure that he heals up and he's healthy when there
comes
time to trade him?
Well, I think when he does get on the field, they want to put the best film out there that they can, because that enhances his trade value, if in fact that's what their aim is. You know, he's sick today, not on the practice field. So it just seems like one thing after another for him this year. It's been a really trying season, and just a year removed from signing that big contract. So it's been a tough go, and that's kind of the albatross that big contracts become for players, because if the slightest problem arises, it becomes almost impossible to live up to the terms of that contract, especially when you're not on the field.
Because Ford let you go, and I don't know what the answer is to this, but I've been thinking about it the last few days. The weird dynamic of the schedule, to play the Dolphins twice in the last 3 weeks, a couple of weeks apart, to sandwich the Patriots in between those two games, what impact do you think that'll have on this series between Buffalo and Miami, a critically important series for both teams who both harbor playoff aspirations?
It ratchets up the intensity, which is certainly what the league is after at the end of the year, which is why a lot you'll see it's across the league. It's not just the AFC East. You go across the league. I mean, the Chiefs are playing the Chargers this week. There are a lot of division matchups in the final month of the season. I think that was done with the express intent of eliminating these throwaway games that we've seen in the past between week 16 and 17, teams resting starters, teams taking marquee players off the field. For a league whose television ratings have been down again this year, the last thing they want are throwaway games in week 16 and 17. So I think in an effort to create more intense matchups, more intriguing matchups that have direct impact on where the playoff picture is going, they've set it up much the way baseball does at the end of the year, ton of division games at the end of the season. And this is an example of that, I think.
It's working. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's working.
It means something.
It's like
deny that.
It's exciting.
Yeah, like
it's
a playoff
exciting
series. All right, Chris, we'll let you get back out there. Thank you very much.
You got it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us in studio as the Bills are almost wrapping up practice on this Wednesday. We've got Jordan Poyer coming up a little bit later on in the show when practice clears, and Jordan Poyer has just been nominated, voted, selected by his teammates as the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award for this year. We'll talk with Jordan about that. We're going to talk about the Dolphins with Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive. The Bills practicing indoors in the AdPro Sports Training Center today. The other side of that wall right over there. Not the one you can see behind us with all the jerseys and the bricks, but the other wall. You should see. Sometime we should turn the camera around and show people.
That would be cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool over there. Swimming pool, plants, it's nice. But over there is where the Bills are practicing. They're almost done. Getting set for the Dolphins. Dolphins coming off a Monday night surprise, their victory over the New England Patriots. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a reporter who's covered the Miami Dolphins since and the NFL since 1990, Dolphins reporter for the Miami Herald. He's a Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Happy to have Armando Salguero on the line with us. Armando, John Murphy and Donald Jones up here in chilly Buffalo, where there's a foot and a half of snow on the ground.
Are talking about swimming pools. I was thinking maybe the Dolphins are going to Southern California this week.
Yeah, the Miami of the North, they used to call it back in the day. Buffalo, New York.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, where did that game? Where did that team come from Monday night? I sat down to watch the Dolphins and the Patriots, expecting a typical result, and all of a sudden a game broke out, and the Dolphins were outstanding. What happened there?
You know that the Dolphins have beaten both Super Bowl teams from last year, right?
Yeah, I saw that.
So it's kind of interesting that they are able to rise to that level against both Atlanta and New England. On the other hand, the question that begs to be answered is, why don't they rise to that level more often? Because if you can be not only be in a game, but beat quality teams like that, all you have to do, supposedly, is raise it a couple more times a year, and you're going to be in the playoffs. And yet, as we sit here today, the Dolphins are outside looking in on, you know, the playoffs. Obviously, they have a chance to get there if they win out and a lot of other things happen. But the point being, I mean, this is a team that lost against 4-9 Tampa Bay at home.
Yeah.
How do you weigh that against, you know, beating up the Super Bowl champs at home? It's right. Just incredible.
Hey, Armando, what's the feeling on Jay Cutler down there? I mean, the feeling league-wide is that, you know, he's inconsistent. He doesn't always seem like he wants to actually be on the field. What's the feeling down in Miami on Jay Cutler?
You know, it's weird because it's an evolving thing. And when he got here, the idea was, hey, he's Jay Cutler. He was a former first-round draft pick. He's experienced. You know, he's got a great arm. You know, he's done a lot of things. And then we saw him play. And it was now I think that in South Florida there's the same vibe for Jay that there was nationally before. He's a inconsistent guy, great talent, but hasn't harnessed that talent to the point where you see it, you know, not necessarily week in and week out, but more often than not. You know, he threw 3 touchdown passes against the Patriots without an interception. He's just as liable to throw 3 interceptions against the Bills without a touchdown. You never know.
You know, the talent is unmistakable, though, Armando. And when I watched him the other night and when I've seen him a couple times this year, I think of what the NFL scouts, a lot of scouts, call arm talent. He's got it, arm talent, doesn't he? When it's going good for him, he's about as good as it gets as far as arm talent.
Yeah, he still has it. He doesn't have it at, you know, at the level that he used to, like when he was 24, 25, 28. This guy's 32 now. I will say this. If you want to see less of that arm talent, all you have to do is get after Jay Cutler a little bit. And that's obviously a thing that most older quarterbacks, they don't like getting hit too much. Peyton Manning didn't. Tom Brady doesn't. Jay Cutler doesn't either. And, you know, when you get after him, he gets off his spot. He starts to drift. His footwork becomes a disaster. And all of a sudden, that arm talent is arm talent for a cornerback.
Now, what about the running back, Drake? You know, he really emerged on the scene against the Patriots on Monday night. And I think a lot of people, when they shipped Jay Ajayi up to the Eagles, a lot of people felt like, what are they doing, until they saw Drake on Monday night against the Patriots.
And I want to tell you that the Dolphins knew all along that Kenyon Drake was going to be this guy, but they didn't. And here's why I know this. It's when the trade happened, it wasn't a trade of, well, we've got two super talented guys that we have to get on the field, so let's trade Jay Ajayi. That wasn't it. It was more like, we don't like the way Jay Ajayi is working. We don't like the way Jay Ajayi is handling his profession as a, you know, as a professional. We don't like the chemistry. We don't like how he, you know, we have a young room, and we don't like how he lords over that room. So he's out of here. And by the way, we don't like it so much that it doesn't matter who we have behind him, because we're going to think of this as addition by subtraction. I asked people within the organization, so now what do you do? And they're telling me, whatever. We'll figure it out. We're not sure what we're going to do. We're going to give the ball to Damian Williams and Kenyon Drake, and whatever happens, happens. Well, guess what? Kenyon Drake is really good. He's the guy that came from Alabama, and he was in the same backfield with Derrick Henry. In fact, you know, there was like three Alabama guys that went high in the draft, and Kenyon Drake was the backup among the three. And so he's an outstanding speed guy. He runs a 4.38. I don't think people recognize that. He makes guys miss in the hole, and when you need a tough yard, he's proven so far that he can get it.
We're on the line with Armando Salguero of the Miami Herald. We've got a difficult phone connection, but we're going to press on with it for a second. Armando, in answer to your statement a minute ago about, you know, the inconsistent nature of the Dolphins, I got to thinking about Kenyon Drake, second-year player. Xavien Howard emerging now, second-year player. Jordan Phillips on the defensive line, third-year player. Could it be that these players that they've drafted and now developed are coming into their own all at the same time here down the stretch?
That's fair. That's more than fair. On the other hand, you know, earlier in the season, they're supposed to ride guys like Ndamukong Suh, Cameron Wake, Andre Branch, Jay Cutler, who we just talked about, Julius Thomas, Mike Pouncey. All those guys are 28 years old plus. And so I get it. There's a lot of guys on the roster that, as you just mentioned, are coming into their own. But the majority of the roster should be in its own already.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I have one more question for you. You wrote recently, it might have been yesterday, about the Dolphins in a similar situation, 3 years ago. They came to Buffalo after a big victory over Kansas City, I believe, and the Bills sort of ruined their playoff push. Do you see similarities here? Is it kind of a same setup going into this game?
Oh, no, it's not similar. It's exactly the same. They opened the 2014 season with a big, rousing home victory against New England. Yeah, they've been dominating New England at home, believe it or not, for a long time. Belichick and Brady are 7-9 against the Dolphins at home. And after that game, everybody was talking, oh, my God, we just beat us, you know, the New England Patriots. We're awesome. And then they went to Buffalo and lost. And then they played Kansas City and lost. And guess what? This week, they're coming off this rousing victory over the New England Patriots, the Super Bowl champions, and everybody's saying down here, oh, my God, hey, we actually have a chance to go to the playoffs. And now they have to go to Buffalo, and behind that, they have to go to Kansas City.
Does with this Dolphins team, it, could weather be a factor? We're not going to get a crazy storm this coming Sunday, but could cold weather, windy weather, rainy weather be a factor, do you think, to this Miami team?
You know, I've never bought into that because, I mean, look, the Miami Dolphins don't have a roster full of people from Miami. Okay, they've got people from Michigan, they've got people from Iowa, they've got people from all sorts of places where it's not sunny and 80 degrees every day. And so I've never really bought into that whole, you know, oh my gosh, these guys are from Miami. They can't play in inclement weather. What I have bought into is for a long time, the Buffalo Bills had guys like Jim Kelly and Andre Reed and Thurman Thomas. And those guys were good on grass, on snow, on water, anywhere. That's why they used to beat the Miami Dolphins in December in Buffalo.
Armando, thanks for this. We appreciate it. We'll see you up here this weekend. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you.
Armando Salguero, Dolphins reporter for the Miami Herald, covered the Dolphins in the NFL for more than 25 years now. And just like the Dolphins, his phone line was a little bit inconsistent, though.
It was. It was a little bit inconsistent. Nothing's consistent in Miami.
No.
You know that. There's a lot of things going on down there. Who knows? He could have been out on the beach. He could have been anywhere in Miami. But that team is an interesting team, man. I've seen him play in a couple of games this year, and I've seen two totally different teams. You know, so I don't really know what to make of that team.
Hey, this week's game sponsor for the Bills and the Dolphins is Zippo, who reminds you to drop the gloves and fight the cold with a Zippo hand warmer this winter. Zippo, the official game sponsor for the Bills and the Dolphins.
You think we're getting a Zippo in on set?
I bet if you beg on air like you're about to, you could probably get one.
I think I need a Zippo, guys, because I might be actually at the game on Sunday.
Oh, yeah,
so,
really?
You know, I would love to have one, please.
It'd be worth it just to get you to the game to have a Zippo hand warmer. We'll take a break. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Thanks very much for coming back and joining us, John Murphy and Donald Jones, here until 3 today. Jordan Poyer, the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award, coming up on the show a little bit later on next hour. What else we got? We got Tyrod Taylor from the podium today, his thoughts as he practices on a limited basis today. We'll hear that coming up as the afternoon moves along. LeSean McCoy, what's the number, 39 yards away from 10,000? Yeah, I'm sure he's going to talk about that, the chase for 10K. And Thurman Thomas, the Hall of Fame running back, standing by to join us in a minute or two. I did a little research today. Not I was writing a story for the website. LeSean McCoy now with, obviously 10,000 yards within reach probably this week, one would think and one would hope. And when you look at it, 10,000-yard rushers, I believe there are 39. He would be the 39th to do it. I should just look this up since I did it this morning. He'd be the 39th to do it. And of that group, I think there are 13 Hall of Famers. I think there are 13 Hall of Famers. If you get to 12,000 yards, there are 15 running backs who've done it, and 13 of them eligible for the Hall of Fame are in the Hall of Fame. So 12,000 seems to be the threshold, you would think, for Hall of Fame. I'm sure McCoy knows that, and I'm sure, you know, if you look at how he's running this year, yes, he's 29 years old. He would seem to be capable, I think, of getting to 12,000 yards, a couple of thousand more yards in maybe two or three more years. What do you think?
Yeah, I think I could see him getting to 12,000 yards. You know, another 2 years, I think he can make that happen. I don't really see that as being an issue for him. I think he doesn't take that many hits. He has to really take care of his body. You know, he's had some hamstring issues in the past, and that's something that, you know, can creep up as you get older, you know. So he has to do a very good job of taking care of his body. But if he does that, which I'm sure he does, you know, on a regular basis, if he does that, I think he can make that happen. He's not taking that many hits, so I don't really see him falling off because he's taking too many hits. You know, it's going to come down to him being able to take care of his body and being in the right offense.
Here are the right numbers. He needs 39 yards on the ground against the Dolphins to hit 10,000. He's 30th right now on the all-time rushing list. And if he would be the 30th in league history with 10,000 or more yards. 15 of the 29 rushers ahead of McCoy on the all-time list are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But at 12,000 yards, 15 eligible rushers who have 12,000 or more career rushing yards, 13 of those 15 are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's doable.
I think it is doable. I think the biggest question is, even, you know, here next year, at some point here, the team will say, okay, we need to draft a running back, you know. And at that point, is he getting the same amount of carries? Because maybe you have a young, dynamic running back behind him, you know. So is he getting the same amount of carries, enough carries for him to be able to, you know, consistently go over 100 yards a game, things like that. But LeSean McCoy, I think, is still an elite running back in this league, you know, and as long as he is, you need to feed him until you see a drop-off in play. And then at that point, then, you know, you got to go a different way.
It'd be kind of cool to be here Sunday if he was going to get to that 10,000-yard threshold. All right, we've got more coming up, and we're going to talk more with you. One issue to discuss, the Twitter poll, which new Bills player will have the biggest impact on the team down the stretch? That's our Twitter poll. We offer you Benjamin, Matt Milano, Deontay Thompson, or anybody else. And you can ring us up, obviously, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Also, we have Thurman Thomas standing by to join us in studio when we return. So come on back for that. John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. Buffalo Bills are just now coming off the practice field after getting through their Wednesday workout, getting set for the Miami Dolphins. Tyrod Taylor limited in practice today. Bills quarterback moments ago told the news media he feels healthy, but he's taking it one day at a time. He expects to get it going moving forward, he said. Nathan Peterman limited in practice or did not practice today. He remains in concussion protocol. Wide receiver Andre Holmes not practicing today with neck stiffness. Defensive tackle Kyle Williams still nursing a groin injury. He did not practice today as well. Calvin Benjamin, limited work today with his knee. Also limited, Charles Clay, Cordy Glenn, and Chantrell Henderson. Forecast for Sunday calling for cloudy skies, a little bit of rain, and the temperature about 37, 38 degrees. Nothing like last Sunday. The Bills and the Dolphins Sunday, 1 o'clock at New Era Field. We've got the game right here in our flagship in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550. The film of that game last week, Colts and Bills. Denver Broncos trying to get ready for their game tomorrow night against the Indianapolis Colts. The Broncos have decided that there was so much snow and such poor visibility, they cannot use the game film. We tried to watch it, Vance Joseph says, but you can't see it. The Colts are wearing all white. It wasn't worth watching. I watched it about 15 plays, and we pulled it out of our breakdown. They couldn't see. Green Bay Packers' Aaron Rodgers says he's been medically cleared to return from a broken right collarbone. He made it official last night on the eve of their first practice in advance of Sunday's game at Carolina. Rodgers made the announcement in an Instagram post. The matchup with the Panthers, the first game for Rodgers in which he is eligible to return, according to IR rules. He broke his collarbone against the Vikings on October 15th when he landed throwing a forward pass. And the Buffalo Sabres came up with a victory last night against Ottawa, 3-2 the final. Buffalo has now picked up points in four straight games, building off last week's three-game road trip. Sabres are off to Philadelphia today. They play the Flyers at the Wells Fargo Center tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. That's the update from One Bills Drive on this Wednesday afternoon. John Murphy and Donald Jones joined in studio by the Hall of Famer, Thurman Thomas, just getting settled in. You okay?
I'm good.
Yeah, you look good. Thanks for coming.
No problem, man. It's good. It's always good after a win.
Yeah, you were here, right?
Yeah, I was.
Yeah. I'm not going to ask you the obvious question, but of course you've never seen any situation, any conditions like that, right?
No, not the years. And, you know, Sal asked me about it, a couple others, Steve Tasker. I'm like, no, it was never anything like this close. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I mean, we were talking about maybe back years ago, the Arizona game, maybe.
It was windy.
It was windy then, but I think the most snow that we've ever had was probably that first playoff game against Miami where we won 44-34, I think.
And that field, as I recall, and it was a different surface, but it was a coating of snow, and it was slippery.
Yeah.
But this was like a foot of snow. People are literally picking up their feet and dropping through the snow. It was crazy.
It was absolutely crazy. But you know what? And the thing about it is that I saw the guys. I was down in the tunnel, like, before when the guys came out. You know, Indy came out, like, I mean, just high-fiving each other, dancing or whatever. And as they got closer to the field, the noise died down. The noise died down. They were like, oh, my God, what is this?
Are we about to play in this?
Right, exactly. And so, you know, the Bills were, and I've talked to, like, Kyle Williams after the game, and he was like, you know, after about the third quarter, you know, it started like I had to put my hands down. And my hands were getting colder by putting it in the snow all the time. So it was I tell you, it's one of those games where I'm glad we won. But whoever was there that day, remember that game there.
Yeah.
You know, you, Kyle probably wanted to get in the two-point stance, not even put his hand down. Like, you know what? Forget that, man.
Hey, coach, can I play DN right quick where I can stand up?
Yeah, put my hand down in that thing. Oof. What really amazed me was how LeSean McCoy was still able to run the way he normally runs in that weather. I mean, you're talking about actually running on the snow. You're not running on the field at that point, right? So you don't have any traction. Everybody else is out there slipping and falling. They catch a punt. They go to take one step, slip and fall. But LeSean McCoy is still juking guys out, jumping, doing all types of crazy stuff.
You know what? He doesn't have, like, that long stride. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Eric Dickerson could have played in something like that if he had a longer stride. LeSean has a short stride, but he can plant and go. And he – a defender in front, he knows what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. That defender does not have an idea which way he's going. So he's able to sit and cut, and he has such great balance.
Yeah.
Man, his balance is unbelievable. I mean, the play that he jumped over the guy, I mean, it was no farther than from here to here. And he planted and jumped and had to keep his body still going in motion as he hit the ground. Man, that was that's something, man. I told him before the game, I said, didn't you have a game like where it snowed and you were in Philly? Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said, yeah, I gained, 235 yards. I mean, he knew his exact stats, you know, and everything. So I was like, all right, well, I need that out of you today, you know. And, no, I just had a tremendous game.
Let's talk about Shady for a second. Thurman Thomas with us. You can phone in comments and questions for Thurman at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. He needs 39 yards to get to 10,000 yards. Pretty significant milestone.
Yeah.
He'd be the 30th running back to do that. Do you remember when you got to 10,000, Thurman?
No.
I mean, but you went on for another couple thousand yards, at least 2 or 3
I never remember the 10,000.
Yeah, but it's big, right?
I was never really a stat guy, so I don't really know if it was big. But obviously it's big, and he knows the numbers. It's only been 30 guys. It's probably been over 3,000 running backs, you know. So being the 30th, I just never was a numbers guy. I just never never was just kind of like involved in it. And like a couple of years ago, after in the middle of my career at the end, I think, I broke OJ's record, but had no idea about it. I mean, I heard about it early in the week or whatever, but when it happened, just nothing, you know. And after the game, got a game ball or whatever. So I just never in the numbers. But, you know, he's been a guy who's been in the numbers, and I appreciate that. I mean, he's doing what he set out to do, and he's close to 10,000 yards, and got a game here at home, so hopefully he'll do it here at the New Era Field.
Well, let me ask you this: 50. I mentioned these numbers to Donald a minute ago. 15 of the 29 guys ahead of Shady are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But if you get to 12,000 career rushing yards, which you did, 15 eligible rushers. There's a couple of guys still not eligible: Adrian Peterson and Frank Gore.
Yeah.
15 guys eligible, 13 in the Hall of Fame. If you get to 12,000, that's Hall of Fame territory, right? I mean, you'd have to expect that he'd be in the Hall of Fame, right?
Well, if you look at those numbers, I think if you look at those numbers, but I think what a lot of those guys have or had is that, you know, were those 15,000 and were there playoffs involved with that too, and not just regular. I know it's just regular season, but, okay, you could just be gaining a lot of yards.
Yeah.
Like Barry Sanders. I mean, how many times did he go to the playoffs in 10 years? He went probably 2 times or 3 times.
Not enough.
Yeah, not enough. So it's I think that kind of adds on to it. But, I mean, it was Barry. He got his 15,000 in the regular season.
Yeah.
They didn't play a lot in the playoffs. So I think voters probably look at that like, okay, you're running for a lot of yards, but you're not helping your team. You're not getting anywhere. Mm-hmm. So
while you were playing Thurman, did you think about the Hall of Fame? Like towards the tail end of your career, did you think, man, I got a chance to maybe get to Canton, Ohio someday?
You know, I didn't think about it, John, until the end when it was actually kind of brought up. It was actually kind of brought up by, I remember the story, we were sitting in the big tree. It was brought up by Bruce Smith.
Bruce. How did that conversation go? I'm going to the Hall of Fame.
Well, you know, somebody wrote an article, and Bruce saw it, right? And, like, who would be the top bill to, like, go in the Hall of Fame? And he saw it, and he was – oh, it would be me first, right? I'm definitely going to the Hall of Fame.
No shot.
Right,
did he say that to you, though?
Right, right.
You ain't got no shot
at
making it.
So at that point, and I think that was about my 10th year.
Mm-hmm.
And so still had a couple more years. But I think that's probably when I actually first thought about it, you know. Somebody else mentioned it. Then we got the article and kind of realized, like, all right, maybe I have a shot, you know. But at the time, I'm still trying to get that ultimate goal of winning the championship.
Sure. You know, how close is the group of guys that you have, you know, what, 15 guys over 12,000 yards?
Yes.
Did you say?
Yes.
How close is that group of guys? I know the Hall of Fame guys, you guys are all close with each other.
Yeah.
You talk. But what about going over certain certain markers. Do you guys get closer because, look, we're the only ones that went over this.
Well, all the guys in the Hall of Fame, we just hang together. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really close. We've really been getting closer probably the last couple of years because I made a comment about how the Buffalo Bills players sit at a certain table at the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. you know, and so last year, Jim said, you know what, I'm going to go start taking pictures with Joe Namath and Joe Montana and all these guys. So Jim did it. Then the running backs, we followed in. Like, okay, this is a nice little group here to be in, you know. Sure. You're like 15, okay, you're over 12,000 or whatever. So we become a little bit closer in that sense. And, but you look at guys and be like, oh, that's Marcus Allen right there. Benny mm-hmm. had that nice touchdown in the Super Bowl against Washington, you know. All these guys know everything about each other. And it's not just the running back. It's the wide receivers. It's the quarterbacks. You know, obviously, I mean, I just love football so much. I know about Joe Montana, and mm-hmm. you know, and I can very easily say what is his best game or whatever. So, you know, it's becoming real close because there's only, wow, I forgot the number, 308.
Hall of Fame
in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Yes. I think 169 are living. Wow. So we've actually, at the past couple of years, we've become more closer together, not only the running back position, but just everybody that's in the Hall of Fame.
Thurman's in studio with us. A phone call here from Aaron in Depew. Hello, Aaron. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
All right. You guys were talking about hitting 10,030, 31 yards? So 10,000, but also factor in his receiving yards on top of that. It cuts that 30 down to about four other people who I believe are all in the Hall of Fame that match the receiving yards as well as those rushing yards. He has 12,000 rushing yards with those. I think he's a lock for the Hall of Fame at that point.
Good point, yeah. Receiving yards count.
Yeah, they count. Those up. I mean, if you can catch, they count. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how many receptions Barry had or how many receptions Emmitt had. You know, but they probably had a lot of receptions, but their average per yard probably wasn't mm-hmm. real high, you know. So, no, they look at that stuff, and I appreciate that. I mean, because you want to be an all-around back. You don't want to come off the field. Mm-hmm. And Shady's a guy who doesn't come off the field. So, I mean, it's going to be one of those deals where it's almost like the wide receivers. You got to wait now to see how long it's going to take Edgerrin James to get in. I mean, it's some guys that are coming up that have some really great numbers, but they might not get in for a while.
Right. You know, I always wonder this, and, you know, you've been in for a while. There are a bunch of guys who have been in for a while, and there are a bunch of guys who deserve to be in but might not get in. You have some younger guys that go and they get in right away. Yeah. And there's always talk of, man, they forget about these guys that played back in the day. You know, so what's that dynamic like when you see a certain guy get in and you're like, oh, man, they're passing over my boy who I've known should be in for a long time. What's that like for you?
Well, I mean, it's the same for me. I think Randy Moss should be a first batter. I think T.O. should be a first batter. I'm looking at him and be like, oh, man. Those guys put up numbers. They put up numbers, and people are talking about stuff that they did, like off the field or whatever. No, man, you're on that football field. Mm-hmm. And then you look at that, and you be like, man, that dude put in numbers. I can't really sit up here and think about a lot of guys right now, but when you see that guy, you be like, oh, wait a minute. And they just put him in over him? Wait a minute, something ain't right here. So, I mean, as players, you think about that. I think about that all the time. I never thought that Richard Dent had to wait five times, you know, to get in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. I mean, MVP of the Super Bowl, one of the best defenses, but you see Mike Singletary going on his first try. You see Dan Hampton going on his first try. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so there's guys that you look at and be like, man, I want to get in that voting area and see what y'all are talking about because this guy deserves to be. Yeah. And you know what? And I really, as this has been going, guys really don't care if it's three wide receivers.
Right.
We don't care. Mm-hmm. Just put the best players in. That's it.
Yeah,
good point. So, with Thurman, he's in studio with us. A couple more minutes. Mike in Springville is on the line with a question for Thurman. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Always a pleasure to watch your show. Thurman, always been a big fan of yours since you came on as a rookie until you left Buffalo. And I was kind of curious. The one thing I always respected about you was whenever you scored a touchdown, you just kind of flipped the ball to the ref. You know, and I always thought that was a class act, that your actions weren't bigger than the team or the game. And I was kind of curious what your thoughts are on these choreographed celebrations now that seem to be popular in the NFL.
They were good at the beginning. Now I can't really. I see a couple of guys start to duplicate a couple of Golden Tate, I think he putted in the end zone or what. Mm-hmm. I've seen that before. So now, you know.
Show me something new.
Right, show me something new. So I really haven't been paying attention to to the dances, the celebrations that they that they've been coming up with now. So, I mean, I was
an expert right here. We have an expert.
It's not even an expert. I just feel like, you know, it's generational. And you got a younger generation, like my son, who's 7, who loves to see the celebrations. Mm-hmm. You have older people who hate to see the celebrations.
Right.
You know? And that's just what it is. But you have a lot of younger kids watching the game that love it. And
they love it.
As soon as they see something, they go and they imitate it themselves.
Yep. They score a touchdown or whatever. They're doing it
right
there on the football field. I mean, that's just, it's generational.
How come you never did it, though?
Huh?
How come you never got involved?
I don't know. I just never did. I didn't have any desire to dance or anything like that. And after Marv Levy told me, act like you've been there before, I never did it again, you know? Yeah. But, I mean, I kind of wish I would have done something. It would have been something like Shady's.
Oh, okay.
It would have been something like Shady's, okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot different now because you got a lot of choreographed stuff, you know? Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And you're here, you get paid to entertain people. So entertain the fans. And that's older, younger, regardless, entertain them.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it as long as it doesn't go too long. Sometimes the guy will score a touchdown and he's like assembling people. He's like, you go here.
Right. You see the ref.
Only thing you do is look at the ref. Look at the ref. The ref will give you, be like, all right, it's time to go now. So you can see that ref going like, okay, it's time to go.
Oh, man.
We're in studio with Thurman Thomas. Let's go to Leroy in Buffalo. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, big shout out to the Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas. So he reminds me of the story years. I'm 53 years old, been in Buffalo all my life. So that was the high time for Buffalo Bills and Donovan, and of course, Murphy. But my question is, man, I was watching the game the other night, and they kept putting the standings up. They had Baltimore in that sixth spot.
Oh, yeah.
Can you give me that breakdown on what's legitimate about that? Because are they going to kind of – is there some bureaucracy behind the scenes? They're going to push this out only in Buffalo?
No, I mean, the Bills are the sixth seed now, but as Chris Brown pointed out Monday, it's a little complicated because they're going down to the common opponents, and the Bills don't have enough common opponents with the two others that are 7-6, Baltimore and the Chargers, to break that tie. So they go down to the next tiebreaker. Eventually, the common opponents will factor in, and if that's the case, then the Bills would not be the sixth seed.
You get a clear picture if you win Sunday.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
You get a clear picture if you win Sunday. And, man, that's fine. We were on the show and weren't even really talking about it.
I know. Yeah. I know we're talking about it. And that's a good question, Leroy, but all I can tell you is you got to wait until the whole thing is crystallized, at least for another week. It might take another week. Have you ever been around a season where you're – not the Dolphins, but any division opponent, you're playing them not just twice in 3 weeks, but twice in the last 3 weeks of the season. I mean, it's almost like a hockey playoff series or something, you know, a home and home series, right?
It is great, a home and home series. There
right?
you go, right?
With the Patriots sandwich.
With the Patriots, with the same way, yeah. I can't remember anything being like this, even when I played, that games were this close. You get one, you come out and decide, okay, do we get Miami in September or do they come down here in December?
Right.
You know, those are the kind of – but now it's like this many at the end, and you almost kind of look at it, I was like, man. See, we're at this point, we probably would have been in play the Patriots twice.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Has anybody else done it like this before?
I don't remember it around the Bills.
Right.
The league is trying to do it now a lot more, though. You know, just because, obviously, ratings. They're trying to do a lot of different things. But it makes it more exciting when you're playing divisional games, you know, at the end of the season. And it also makes it a lot harder because it's hard to beat a team twice in this league.
Yeah.
And it's hard to beat them twice in 2 weeks.
Well, give us a break with the Patriots. That's what it is. I mean, if you're looking at a division that you're going to start doing this, this is not the division
not
to do
division,
it in.
Yeah.
It should have been what's a good division now?
Man, what's one that's the NFC East?
Well, the NFC West is pretty good, right?
Right. Now, if they would have did it in one of those divisions where there's been a toss-up for the past 15 years, do it in that division and not somewhere where the Patriots have dominated the past 17 years.
The AFC West, you know, with Kansas City,
yeah, that
would have
been a great one.
Even
to start
Oakland
in.
Can beat either, you know, any of those teams. Denver is kind of down, but it's competitive.
Yeah.
Really.
Call here for you, Thurman, from Mark in New Jersey. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, guys, happy holidays. Season's greetings.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
And also, smooth shout out to my man, Donald Jones from New Jersey. I'm fellow Jerseyite.
Yeah, you know what? Thank you.
Jersey, man.
So I have one kind of silly question for Thurman, and I also have a football question for Thurman.
All right.
I'll do the silly one first, get that out of the way. So when I was growing up, I remember reading something about how you used to collect Garfield dolls.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you still collect Garfield.
Nah, I stopped that about 30 years ago. And I think the company stopped it about 30 years ago, too.
What happened to all of them?
They're at my mom's house.
Okay.
Yeah. I got like 50.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Okay. But no, cool. I do not collect them anymore.
Mark, you had another question for Therm.
Yes. Since it is Dolphins Week, the one player that I always think about during Dolphins Week is Carwell Gardner. And I can't remember another player growing up watching the Bills that you could visibly tell that he had complete disdain and disrespect for Miami, especially with the whole Brian Cox thing. I want to get Thurman, your perspective on Carwell. Was he like really like, what was he like off the field? Was he like as amped up and crazy off the field as he was on the field?
No, he wasn't too much crazy off the field. But I don't think that Carwell was that guy that really got up for like Miami all the time. Carwell got up for everybody. It wasn't just the Miami Dolphins. It just happened to be at a period of time where, you know, he had that fight with Brian Cox.
Mm-hmm.
What
year was this?
Oh, God.
91, 92.
I was young.
You were young. And I think, you know, Carwell played years after that. And so every year with that, it would be Carwell Gardner and where's Brian Cox? Because they had a fight at the end of the game. And so I think at that point he became, you know, that guy. But he was like that with every football team that he – that we played against. But he was from Louisville. I mean, big guy, great special team player.
Yeah.
Great special team player. I mean, he was, you know, it was Tasker, Mark Pike, Carwell Garner, Butch Rowe. Mm. You know, those guys were fighting for, like, award week that Monday coming in after victory, man. And he was a part of it, big part of Bruce DeHaven's coaching philosophy on special teams.
Thurman, before we let you go, you know how we like to figure out which celebrities you've been traversing with when you come in here. You know who was here Monday on the show?
Yeah.
Who?
Dash Strawberry.
Oh.
He was in my suite.
He was in your suite.
He was in my suite. Man, you can't.
You got to talk to him for 20 minutes. He was in my suite for the whole game.
He was in my suite, yeah. Hey, man, if a famous person is coming, they're coming to my suite.
They're coming to see you.
They're not coming for anything else.
I thought I was going to shock you.
Man, the straw man, go way back.
He's a good guy.
Great guy. Really, that he's, you know, turned his life around. Now, he is just, when I heard that he was coming up here, he was like, man, is Thurman here? And I said, yeah, I got a suite. Come on in. And, you know, Lil Thurman's a baseball player.
Oh, wow.
So we got some advice on, like, on film for Darryl Strawberry because Thurman wants to switch hit. So he wants to bat left-handed. And so Darryl was kind of giving some advice of what to do right now to start it off. Continue to bat right-handed, but you just got to work on it. I mean, it was. I was sitting there. Me and Patty was going like, oh, my God.
Yeah. You can't find a better hitting instructor than that.
No,
you know, I was doing research before he came in here Monday, and came across something that said when he came up, I kind of forgot about this. People thought he might be the next, like, Ted Williams. That's what a good hitter he was.
He was a great
hitter. He was like a professional hitter.
Yeah, and tall.
Yeah, yeah, big. Tall, I couldn't believe how big he was.
Yeah, and, man, I mean, and landed really in the perfect spot for him, New York. I know he had,
he had
problems
issues,
afterwards, but still, I mean, man, just think about had he not, he would be, man, he'd be like Jeter.
He would be like Jeter, man.
If he didn't go astray. Well, thank you, Thurman. I thought I had one on you, but I guess it'll have to.
No, John, you don't.
I can't get a better view on celebrities.
There's not many celebrities that you're going to meet that he hasn't already
met in the suite.
Had dinner with and all types of stuff.
Thanks, Thurman. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate it.
Thurman Thomas, Bills Hall of Famer, celebrity watcher in studio with us. Coming up next, Jordan Poyer, Bills safety, who's the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award. Standing by to join us next, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Our thanks to Thurman Thomas for joining us in studio as we continue on. The Bills getting set to play the Miami Dolphins. And the announcement came earlier this afternoon while the Bills were out on the practice field The Buffalo Bills 2017 Ed Block Courage Award, the nominee from the Bills, safety Jordan Poyer, and he joins us in studio right now, selected by his teammates to be the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award, which goes to a player who demonstrates a commitment to the principles of sportsmanship and courage. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty good honor.
I definitely feel honored. I feel very honored to be recognized by my peers and my teammates, man. It was a crazy season last year with the way everything happened, but I definitely feel very blessed to be in the position that I'm in, to be here and play for this football team.
You suffered a pretty serious injury last year in Cleveland when you were playing there, a lacerated spleen.
Mm-hmm. And it's kidney.
Kidney.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is not just a football injury. That's got to be like a life-threatening type of injury, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty scary. The plays right here, I got reverse field and I just got blindsided pretty bad. And doctor said maybe an inch higher, inch lower. It definitely could have been life threatening. But I was able to get up and walk away from it, even the injury and all, but it was a hard way to end the season. The blessing about it, I was able to be there with my fiance with the birth of my child. So it's almost a silver lining, but like I said, it's definitely feel very honored to be selected by my teammates for this award.
When you stepped on the field with the Bills this year, training camp, even before that in the spring, and then when you started playing games in September, was there any thought at all to the injury you suffered and maybe, recovering from that? Did you feel anything back there?
I didn't feel anything, no. I definitely kind of was in the back of my head, kind of the first time I'm stepping on the field, since the injury. So it was in the back of my head, but once the flow of the game started moving, I totally forgot about it. And then, moving the second game, third game, haven't even thought about it. Really haven't thought about it until they had me up for this award said that I won. So, it's a huge, huge honor, man. I feel very honored. I feel, just very blessed to be able to be in this position.
You had some long seasons in Cleveland, mm-hmm. Obviously with the injuries and mm-hmm. the big one that we're talking about, but also just lack of wins.
Mm-hmm.
So what's it like for you individually to be on a team that's at least right now in the hunt, mm-hmm. To get into the playoffs?
Yeah, man. I mean, we always talk about playing meaningful football in December. And, that's what you want. That's what you play the game for, to play meaningful football games during this time of year. I'm excited about the opportunity. I know our team's very excited about the opportunity. We're just gonna continue to work. Continue to keep our foot on the pedal and take advantage of the opportunity that we have this weekend.
We're in studio with Jordan Poyer, Bills safety, the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award winner this year. One winner selected over the entire league. That comes up, I believe, next March or something, next spring, I think, Jordan. Mm. That's when they typically do it. We mentioned, you had those years in Cleveland. Obviously, Cleveland's not, Miami of the North. You get some weather there, but there's nothing remotely resembling the kind of weather you played in last Sunday.
Nothing at all. Nothing that I've ever played in or ever even lived in. So it's definitely one of those, getting used to. But, I'm used to it now. Man, we played in, 18 inches of snow this last weekend and had an absolute blast. And so, I hope it keeps snowing, and I hope we use that to our advantage.
What was it like when you came out of the tunnel? And it was like, oh,
it was surreal, man. It was surreal. That whole moment, as soon as, because we came in the tunnel, there was no snow on the ground. We came back out right before the game, and just to see the field, just to see the snow going crazy. I mean, it was almost surreal. Like, dang, this is what we're doing right now. And so, obviously it worked out. It's always better when you win, but it was a fun atmosphere. Our fans were in it, and it was a fun game to play in, and one that I'll definitely remember for a very long time.
We've all been talking all week about how much fun it was, but it was an overtime game.
Yeah.
If it didn't go your way, think we'd be thinking about it the same way?
I don't. Probably not at all, but we got the W, so yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. What was the most fun, trying to find your footing out there or trying to keep up with receivers from the Colts? Or what was
the most fun?
Well, what was the biggest challenge?
The biggest challenge really was definitely the footing. Taking on blocks and having to try to get your pad level low, but at the same time not slide, coming out of the post. It was just really hard to keep your foot in. But at the same time, we only ran three or four defensive calls the entire game. But at the same time, the offenses were limited. And so really it came down to technique, doing your job, staying in your gap. And we were able to find a way at the end. The most fun part was seeing Shady hit that hole and going to celebrate with everybody in the end zone. I mean, that right there was, you know.
Was there a point in the game where you said to yourself, these fans are crazy?
Oh, as soon as I was out there for warm-ups and I see all those fans out there in the cold, man, I'm like, dang, these people are real out here. And then once the kickoff started and I saw everybody, you know, piling in there, throwing snow, you know, getting loud. You know, these fans are real out here, man. It's a blessing to, you know, be able to play out here and step foot on the field in front of these fans.
I thought going in with the weather, with, quite frankly, the opponent, the Colts, I thought maybe there'd be 40,000 people there, but there were a lot of people there for as bad as the weather was.
Yes, there was a lot of people, and, you know, they stayed the whole game, and were able to celebrate a victory with us at the end of it.
Pretty fun day, but yeah. Now you've got more days to come. I mean, yes, you know, that wasn't the end of it.
Yes,
tell me about the prep getting ready for the Dolphins this week, and what are you looking at? What are you seeing when you look at the Dolphins' offense on tape?
A good team, man. They're starting to feel you get hot a little bit. You know, they got strong running back in Drake, who's running hard. He's very good out of the backfield, and obviously you got 14 Landry, and then a savvy veteran in Cutler, and then you got Steels on the outside. You know, taking the top off, and so. You look at the offense and offense side of the ball, they got some weapons on that side. And so, you know, we're still preparing. We had a really, really good week, really good day of practice today. So continue to prepare. There's a lot more film to be watched. And, you know, obviously they had a huge win against New England last weekend. And so, you know, they're feeling pretty good about themselves. And so we're going to get their best. And we're excited about the opportunity.
You know, a lot of people talk about and especially here in Buffalo with the big hit to Aaron Williams last year. But a lot of people talk about Jarvis Landry and think that he's really, you know, their best receiver. And he's good, you know. But I personally feel like Kenny Stills is their guy, you know. And then Devontae Parker, people sleep on him as well.
Yeah, he Stills, man, he ran a route against Denver. He was a double move. And I had never seen, you know, a wideout run the type of double move. I mean, it was just a stutter go. But, you know, just, you know, his technique and, it, you know, he's a solid receiver. And, you know, he's fast. He can take the top off. And, it's like I said, it's going to be a challenge for us. We're going to have, you know, be on our A game. And it's a playoff game. That's how we got to take it. You know, playoff mentality. Meaningful football in December where they're going to get their A game and we got to be on ours.
Landry has 88 catches. And but the stat that jumps out, I think his average is 8.5 yards per catch. Mm-hmm. So what kind of routes is he running? Where does he usually wind up?
You know, he's not taking the top off. After catch is when he does his
like
thing. He's like a running back after he catches the ball. And he runs hard. I remember playing him last year. I think it was our third game of the season. Dude runs hard, and a lot of respect for that guy, and he's a competitor. You know, I think all those wideouts over there are pretty good competitors, and so they're going to get in your face, talk crap. You know, it is what it is. You know, we're going to have to get out there and hit him early and you know, take him out of his game.
What about Jay Cutler? What do you see in Jay Cutler? Everybody has their perception of Jay Cutler over the years. What have you seen out of different games this year from Jay Cutler?
He's a savvy quarterback, man, and he's a veteran guy who understands concept, understands looks. You know, he tries to get his offense in the best play. You know, he'll take risks sometimes. I mean, you know, sometimes he might throw the ball up in double covers. He might throw the ball across his body, but you know, he's got a strong arm, and you know, he knows where he wants to go with the football, and he's got some weapons on that side of the ball to do that with.
A couple of minutes left here with Jordan Poyer, Bill Safety, as he comes off the practice field today. Every time I ask Sean McDermott about pass rush, he winds up crediting the back end of the defense. And every time you ask him about coverage on the back end, he winds up crediting the pass rush. It seems like he goes overboard trying to let everybody know that any sack, any pressure that leads to an interception is a team thing. It's not just one unit.
Rush plus covers, man. It equals good things. And so anytime in the back end we're able to, you know, get the quarterback to hold the ball just for another second, and you're able to get the, you know, D-line up there and getting sacks, you know, it's huge. And anytime, you know, they're able to be up there in seven-man fronts and stop the run and make the quarterback throw the ball, you know, it's huge on the back end. So it goes all 11 guys on the field doing their job. And I know that sounds cliche, but that's, you know, what this defense is. And so, you know, we understand, you know, what we have ahead of us and what we have to do. But like I said, you know, when you get all 11 guys, you know, doing their job, you know, that's any game. That's the game of football. But it just makes things easier in the back end. And then up front, you know, I can only imagine, you know, we're holding our own in the back end. And they're able to, you know, the quarterback holds the ball another second. They're able to get to the quarterback. You know, they get the sack. You know, it's a team game. So we're excited about the opportunity this weekend.
Yeah, Jordan, this season has been long and a lot of ups and downs, a lot of twists and turns, mm-hmm. and trades and stuff that nobody envisioned when the season began. Mm-hmm. And yet here you are with everything that you kind of set out to do right in front of you with only 3 weeks left. Just give me your mindset, maybe this team's mindset going into the stretch here.
You know, like you said it, you know, everything is right there in front of us, man. Three games left, you know, in the hunt in December, meaningful football in December. You know, it's right there with everything that's happened this offseason or the early in the regular season. You know, that's done now. You know, three games left, we're in the hunt. You know, a lot of things could happen.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of things could happen. And so, you know, just take one game at a time and every day, you know, just focus on, you know, being detailed in your work, coming out of the practice and just be in detail, man, and understanding what it's going to take to win this football game.
You know, we were talking about the schedule and the way it's set up, mm-hmm. you know, with these last three games being all divisional games, mm-hmm. Dolphins twice, the Patriots right in the middle of the Dolphins two games. Do you guys think about that stuff, having these last three games? Yeah, it's meaningful, but they're divisional opponents.
Yeah. I mean, they are divisional games, so obviously, you know, they're even that much more important. But, you know, it is kind of different how they did the schedule. You know, I had never seen it like that, but you know, to be able to play three division, you know, back to back to back games, and you know, Miami 2 weeks in a row, or not 2 weeks in a row, but Miami, New England, Miami. You know, it's gonna be a lot's gonna happen these next 3 weeks, and so like I said, just be detailed on our work, man, and you know, take one game at a time, and I think we'll be successful.
Thanks very much for coming in here, and again, congratulations, the nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award for the Buffalo Bills. Jordan Poyer, Bill Safety, joining us. Donald and I back with more. You can join us as well. Phone lines open 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We've covered an awful lot of territory today, and we've still got more than an hour to go. But if you're just joining us, you missed Chris Brown, Bills insider, BuffaloBills.com, who was with us early on to talk about today's practice. Practice started about 11, ended about 45 minutes or so ago. Armando Salgaro of the Miami Herald joined us at 12:30. Thurman Thomas just left. We had Jordan Poyer in a second ago. All of that you can catch up on our website, BuffaloBills.com, a little bit later on today, anything you missed. Like to hear from you as the Dolphins game approaches. What do you think about the remaining three games on the schedule and the Buffalo roster? As we said to Jordan, Donald, there's an awful lot of turnover this year, a lot of twists and turns. Guys are playing now that you probably couldn't even name earlier in the year. Guys are playing who weren't even on the roster earlier this year. Our Twitter poll question, we'd like to engage with you on this. Which new Bills player, and you can define new any way you want, but which new Bills player is going to have the biggest impact down the stretch run here, the three games? Let us know what you think, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter, and we can, we can entertain anybody you'd like. On Twitter, 58% of you say Kelvin Benjamin will have the biggest impact down the stretch. 29% of you say Matt Milano, the rookie linebacker, got a start last week, will have the biggest impact. 7% say the wide receiver Deontay Thompson. 6% have somebody else in mind. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's take a call here from Bob. Hello, Bob. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, I'd like to know. My son and I are very Buffalo fans, and we've been watching you. Buffalo started out the season. Why have they lost so many games by 1 point to teams that they should have beat?
Like who?
Like the Dolphins, they lost to. They lost to a couple other ones. I forgot which ones they were.
They haven't even played the Dolphins yet, Bob.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think back. They had, I'm trying to think.
Okay.
One team, I forgot what it was. I watched it. They lost by a couple points.
Yeah, they've also been smoked by the Chargers 54-24. Look, most games in the NFL, and I don't have the stats in front of me, most games, the majority of the games are within 7 points.
Right.
And a lot of games are within 3 points. The Bills have had their share of close victories and close losses and some pretty lopsided wins and losses this year. They beat Kansas City by 6. They beat Oakland by 20. They beat Tampa by 3. They beat Atlanta by 6. They beat Denver by 10. They beat the Jets by 9. They lost by 6 to Carolina. I mean, most games are in there.
They're close.
Yeah.
You know, it's to be honest with you, there are a lot of bad teams in the league or average teams in the league, you know, and so you have a lot of close games. There's a lot of parity in the league, and I like it like that, you know.
Sure.
I don't like the NBA, how you have a few teams that, you know, are very good, and you had a bunch of teams, especially the smaller markets, that aren't good. You know, I like in the NFL the fact that there is some parity. You have some teams like the Patriots who are always good. You do, you know, you're going to have that every year. But for the most part, you have a bunch of teams. Like right now, you look at the AFC, it's like, who's going to end up in the last spot in the AFC?
Yeah.
You know, it's still so much undecided. And I like that, you know. And the fact that you have a bunch of close games is a good thing. You know, the Bills this year, they've lost some close games. They've been blown out, you know, by a couple of teams as well. So, yeah, they've just been inconsistent. To answer your question, they've been inconsistent. That's just what it is.
And along with the other group there that's trying to fight for that last playoff spot, you know, it's tempting right now with 3 games to go, 1 home game left, to try to put a bow on the season and characterize this team. And I think that's a mistake because they're certainly the season has yet to be defined with a playoff berth at stake in these last few games. Sean McDermott was asked today about his approach with his team, the final 3 games moving ahead. And he was asked today about his message to the team, these final 3 games of the year. Here's what the head coach of the Bills had to say in answer to that today.
Continue to do what we've done in terms of staying focused on us, staying focused on our process, continue to grow, build, and work towards the vision and where we're trying to go as an organization. And I know we recognize there's noise, and that's good. I mean, it's a credit to the players and how hard they've played and the coaches and how hard they've coached. We've made a lot of progress in a short amount of time. And that said, though, we have to stay true to who we are and focus on what we do. And that means right now coming off the high from the game, hitting the reset button, and getting back down to business so we can earn the right to win come this weekend.
I do think McDermott, Donald, touches on something that maybe is in the back of some people's minds, you know, a little bit, I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, many people think, I think some people think, not everybody, some people think that game Sunday, the win against the Colts in the snow, in overtime, is going to be it for the season, the highlight of the year. But if you listen to Sean McDermott, he's saying, you know, we hit the reset button. We haven't closed the book on this season yet. I think it'd be a big mistake to start thinking in those ways. Look, we talk a lot today and throughout the last several days here about, you know, kind of get a handle on this team. I still struggle with trying to figure out who this team is. They're so wildly inconsistent.
Right.
But the story hasn't been written yet, you know. I don't know how it's going to end. I honestly have no idea how this season's going to end. I don't think anybody has a good firm handle on who this Bills team is in 2017 and the characteristics of this Bills team. They, you know, we thought going in they might be, you know, pick up where they left off on offense. Well, they certainly didn't do that, right?
Right.
They certainly didn't do that. So every preconception you may have had about 2017 Buffalo Bills, I think you'd have to scratch your head and say, well, I don't know. And I think it'd be a mistake to kind of wrap it up before you get to the end of this year.
Yeah, I don't think you can wrap up the season. You still have 3 big games, you know, and to be honest with you, the Dolphins showed that you can even beat the Patriots, you know, so it's obviously harder to do it in New England, but they showed Monday night that team could be beat. The Bills would have to play a very, very good game, a very physical game to be able to beat them, you know, but this is a team that has been very inconsistent. They played some very good games against some good teams. They played some other games against teams that aren't so good that, you know, they've gotten blown out. You know, and so I think you really don't know or have a handle on this team. You can say you have, you know, we have a handle on certain players on the team. I'll go with that. But, you know, as a whole, the team, it's hard to really say what you're going to get week in and week out from this team. This week, you know, they're playing the Dolphins, and that team is the same exact way. You don't know what you're going to get from that team. They could come in here and just totally smoke the Bills. The Bills could come in here and totally smoke them. You know, that's how inconsistent both of these teams have been. What we do know is it's going to be a very intense game. It's probably going to be a very physical game as I watch the Dolphins play. And just the fact that they beat the Patriots, that team right now, they're playing with a lot of confidence just from that one win.
Yeah.
You know, and still sitting in the hunt. So they're going to come in here and try to be very physical with the Bills. The Bills need to come in and be physical back, or they're going to get blown out at home, you know. But because both of these teams have been inconsistent, it's hard to really say what you're going to get from either team. And it's hard to really wrap up, put a bow on the season for either one of these teams because you have so many teams trying to get in the hunt right now.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen with – and people say, well, you look at Baltimore's schedule. Baltimore has to beat Cleveland. They have to
They
have to beat the Colts. You don't know that.
Right.
You know, you never
right.
know what's going to happen, you know. So I think it's going to be interesting. The Bills just have to handle their own business first.
Right. Bills have their injury report out today. Their practice participation report just came out. No practice today for left tackle Cordy Glenn with the illness plus his foot and ankle issues. No practice today for wide receiver Andre Holmes. McDermott mentioned before practice, Holmes has stiffness in his neck. No practice today for defensive tackle Kyle Williams with his groin. Limited practice, I think this is interesting, for Nathan Peterman with his concussion, still in concussion protocol, but the Bills list him as a limited participant in practice today. Limited work today for wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin with his knee. Tight end Charles Clay limited with a knee. Chantrell Henderson limited with a back. Running back LeSean McCoy limited with his knee. Full practice today for Tyrod Taylor with his knee. So that's going in the right direction for sure. Cornerback Leonard Johnson with his knee, full practice. Guard John Miller with an ankle, full practice. Tyrod Taylor, full participant in practice today for the Bills when they initially thought he was going to be limited. So we'll talk more about that. The final hour, we will hear from Tyrod Taylor. In the final hour, we will hear from LeSean McCoy in his chase for 10,000. We hope we hear from you with the phone lines open at 803-0550 and toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Come on back for the final hour of the John Murphy Show. Presented by Napa Auto Parts on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network Sports Update.
The update comes from One Bills Drive. The Bills wrapped up their Wednesday practice just a couple of minutes ago, and the injury report shows Tyrod Taylor getting full practice today. He was going to be limited going into it, but the Bills quarterback coming off that knee injury suffered a couple of weeks ago got in a full practice day today. Tyrod Taylor, that's trending well for the Buffalo Bills. The rest of the injury report, no practice at all today for tackle Cordy Glenn with illness added to his foot and ankle issues. No practice for Andre Holmes with his neck. No practice for defensive tackle Kyle Williams with his groin. Limited work today for wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin with his knee. Limited work today for quarterback Nathan Peterman, who remains in concussion protocol. Also limited today, Charles Clay, Chantrell Henderson, and LeSean McCoy. And again, as we said, Tyrod Taylor, full practice today. The Bills getting set to go up against the Miami Dolphins this Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff at New Era Field, the final regular season home game for the Buffalo Bills coming up on Sunday. Denver Broncos getting set to play the Indianapolis Colts, Buffalo's opponents last week in the snow game. The Broncos put on the video to see what they could of the Colts and found out they couldn't see anything. Broncos coach Van Joseph says the snowstorm camouflaged the Colts so much the game recording was unusable to prepare for this Thursday night's game. The Broncos go to Indy after having snapped their 8-game losing streak Thursday's game with no playoff implications. Broncos and the Indianapolis Colts Thursday night football coming up tomorrow. Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers has been medically cleared to return from a broken right collarbone. He made it official last night, making the announcement in a post on Instagram. Rodgers has been out several weeks and been on injured reserve, eligible to come off injured reserve this week. And the Packers have not made that official yet. But the matchup against Carolina this week, first one that Rodgers is eligible to return. He's been out since he broke his collarbone against Minnesota October 15th. And the Buffalo Sabres, 3-2 winners last night against Ottawa, are off to Philadelphia today. They play the Flyers in Philadelphia tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones in this final hour of the show. We'd like to hear from you, your thoughts, if you please, about the Bills moving down the stretch here, the home stretch. 3 games left to go. And as you look at this Buffalo roster, look at some of the players who've been on and off the roster, some of the additions this year. Which new Bills players do you think will have the greatest impact on how this season turns out? 3 games to go. New Bills player, you define that any way you want. Somebody who just arrived on the scene at some point this year. Which new Bills players you think will have the biggest impact down the stretch? 58% of you think it'll be Kelvin Benjamin. 29% of you think it'll be Matt Milano. 7% have Deontay Thompson in mind. 6% have somebody else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You think it's going to be Milano, Donald, pretty much?
I think it's going to be Milano. It's really hard for me to really pick one of them because you know, Kelvin Benjamin has an impact when he's on the field and being used the right way, you know, and when you throw the ball up to him, as we saw in the snowy game that was Sunday against the Colts, then you use him the right way, he can be a weapon for your team, you know, and when he's out there, teams have to pay attention to him, you know, because, all right, they're going to throw the ball up to him, whether you're in the red zone, whether you're out in the field. You have to really pay attention to him. A defensive coordinator has to pay attention. You probably have to put a safety over the top, and that helps to open things up for somebody else, even helps out in the run game. But Matt Milano, and you talk about moving forward, and even starting with this week with the weapons that the Dolphins have on offense, receivers, and their tight end, Julius Thomas, you need somebody who can cover these guys down the field from the linebacker position, you know, because you need to be able to, as much as you can, stay in base. You don't want to have to always be in nickel. Yeah. You know, you want to, as much as you can. Teams would love to be able to stay in base. If they had linebackers that can truly, truly cover and not have to come out of their base formation, it makes things a lot harder when you have to go nickel. And then you have a good running back that you're facing that can run the ball up in those tackles, you know, in between the tackles. So they would like for Milano to be able to stay in there and cover these guys down the field. And the fact that he's getting better and better every week really helps out.
That improvement from Matt Milano has been noticed by head coach Sean McDermott. He was asked about it today at his morning news conference. The head coach of the Bills asked about Milano and what has put him ahead of Ramon Humber on the Bills depth chart at outside linebacker. Here's what Sean McDermott had to say.
I'll start with Ramon first. You know, I think Ramon has done a lot of good things for this team. Just the way he approached last week, I thought was just all, you know, all class. And Matt did play well. You know, he continues to grow like a lot of our other players. We've got a lot of young guys playing, as I mentioned before, which is good. Good for us moving forward as well. So, you know, there's still good competition there. I wouldn't say that it's totally a done deal because there's a good, healthy competition. And those two make each other better, which is to be expected, really. So, but Matt is the... Like he went out first the other day, he'll be the one to go out there first this week. So.
What did you, I guess, when you were going through the process of looking at Matt Milano out of college, and what did you see in him that you thought he would be a player that could thrive in your defense as you've kind of seen him develop over the last couple of weeks?
You know, I would say his kind of his pedigree, you go back to his background and what different positions he played. He played in space quite a bit. And so you saw some of the overall athleticism that we're seeing today. Smart player, and you know, each game he gets a little bit better, which is important. So the ability to self-correct within a game, the ability to make a jump from one game to the next, in terms of the mental part of the game, was big for us.
Sean McDermott on rookie linebacker Matt Milano, the draft pick from Boston College. I mentioned when Brownie was out here first hour about a conversation I had with the coach earlier this week about Milano. And about, not to overstate it, but in his first real action when Humber got hurt against Atlanta, Milano was, he was almost overmatched. I don't, you know
yeah.
what I mean? And he looked lost.
I think anybody, regardless if their receivers were in against Atlanta, regardless if Atlanta had Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu or not,
yeah.
the way they run offense down there can confuse you. And, you know, you're in that stadium, bright lights on because you're in a dome and all types of stuff. You've been called into action and, you know, halfway through the game, and it's a tight game, and you're trying to beat a very good team,
yeah.
you know, with Matt Ryan on the other side, who was last year's, you know, MVP of the league and yeah. all of that stuff. This is a Super Bowl team. You're asking me to go out there and my first time actually playing, get some meaningful action. I got to go against that team. I'd
yeah.
be lost too, you know, so.
But look where he is. He's gotten better on a pretty much a weekly basis.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. That's what coaches want to see. That's what really anybody wants to see. But especially here in this league, coaches want to see your players getting better every week. All right? Every time you step on the field, I want to see you get better. I don't want to see you make the same mistakes twice. I don't want to see you, you know, if we run this coverage and you mess it up last week or you mess it up in practice, well, you got it right in the game, you know. And, mm-hmm. and it seems like that's what he's doing and that's what the coaches like about him. And he's given them enough confidence in him to put him out there as a starter now, you
yeah.
know, and then take over that spot from Ramon Humber. If you recall, I mean, early in the season, we were like, Ramon Humber has this on lock now. He's been the guy since, you know, the preseason.
Right.
Since OTAs, he was the guy. Like, right away, they were like, Ramon Humber is our guy. And we kept trying to figure out, well, is he really the guy, you know? Or
yeah, we kept looking
else.
For somebody else.
Yeah, we kept looking for somebody
Hodges
else.
Or somebody.
And he had taken that spot over, yeah. You know, and he was playing good early in the season. Well, now you got the young kid who has come in and really starting to emerge, you know, and the coaches can see it and they're happy with it. And they say, you know what, we will reward you with you are the starter now.
Yep, pretty good story. Interesting story to follow as the season moves along. The story this week, though, is going to be quarterback, obviously, and the uncertainty there. But pretty good day for Tyrod Taylor, you would think, with a full workload at practice today. Moments ago in the field house after today's workout, Tyrod Taylor met with the media and answered questions about whether his knee is okay and whether he'll be ready to play this Sunday against the Miami Dolphins. Here's what Tyrod Taylor said today.
Yes, feeling healthy, taking it day by day. Leg is progressing, but I definitely feel good. Today was a good day and a first step to preparation for this weekend, so I feel good.
Were you close last week? How close were you?
It was close, but I think it was the right decision. Of course, the competitor in me is tough to say that because I want to be out there playing. But as a team, we was able to go out there and accomplish a big win under tough conditions. So hats off to the guys. They worked hard throughout the week. Joe and Nate handled everything like professionals that went out there and got the job done.
How much did the conditions play a factor into you not being able to get it?
I don't think anybody predicted that the snow was going to be as bad as that. I think at the point of game time, it was more so just about healthy. As far as I wasn't quite there where I wanted to be and where the trainers wanted me to be to go out there and fully trust that my knee was ready to play a full game.
Is this a pain tolerance thing, or is it, I mean, can you do any more damage than maybe what's already been done, or is it just kind of?
I can probably do more damage that's been done. But it's, at this point, pain tolerance, like I said, it's at a good, feels good today, and I expect it to continue to keep getting better. Since this happened, I haven't had any setbacks with it, fortunately, so got to continue to keep doing the things I'm doing. In the training room, they have a great program and a great plan for me, and continue to trust them and the Lord that I'll be out there playing.
Tyrod, how encouraging is it that, you know, Sean McDermott has maintained for the past week and a half that when you're healthy, you're the starter?
I don't necessarily think about that. My focus each and every week is preparing myself and getting the guys ready to go out there and play, winning football on Sundays. And these next three games, starting with this one, is very important for us. As a team, man, as for offense, two very good teams on the defensive side of the ball, and we have to go out there and execute better than we've done. And the time is now for us to take that step.
They held the Patriots to over 11 on third downs. You know, when you see that, does that kind of make your kind of eyes go up and say, okay, you know, what are they doing here, and you know, kind of how good are they?
I'm a very, very talented team. We know they have talented players across the board, and they've been like that for a while. We look forward to this matchup. Our offensive line look forward to the matchup. As skilled players, we look forward to this matchup. And it's going to be a very good game. Of course, what they did Monday was definitely impressive of them holding the Patriots to what they did. But week in and week out, there should be no surprises in the league. Every team is capable. So we have to bring our A game each Sunday.
What element of you've seen them all year.
Yeah.
You're in week 15, and now you got to play it twice in 3 weeks. So what kind of dynamic does that add to this? Because there's a lot to go off of tape-wise.
Yeah.
But still, you haven't played them yet.
Yeah. I would say, like you said, a lot of tape out there. As far as watching and trying to get tendencies. Of course, this is a team that we played, but new defensive coordinator, but a bunch of the same players. And like I said, there's a bunch of film out there for us to study this week and prepare the best we can to go out there and execute a game plan that Coach puts together on this Sunday.
Just playing off of what Sal said, the last 2 weeks, one conversion out of 24 on third down for their opposing offenses. Have you noticed any difference in what they're doing on third down in comparison to the previous weeks that have been so effective?
I would say a very confident group. And early on, if they get a couple three and outs early on, they feed off that. It's a momentum team. And we have to be able to extend drives early on. Start fast, something that we need to be better at as well. So we take that challenge and look forward to doing it this Sunday.
Do you find it in any way, I'm not sure if ironic, maybe poetic, that it is that, you know, a month after being benched, after this team back in March was thinking of going moving in another direction, is now leaning on you to lead this offense and lead this team back, you know, to the playoffs?
Some of that stuff is really out of my control. Like I said, day to day, I'm thankful for the opportunity, and I take the opportunity serious to prepare and myself as well as this team mentally and physically to the point where we can go out and play winning football. I wouldn't have it any other way. The stuff that I've been through in my life and my career has only made me who I am today. So I take it in stride, learn from it, and continue to keep moving forward.
I know you don't have anything to prove to yourself, but do you feel that there still seems to be something that you need to prove to people down this, you know, in these last three games?
There's always something to prove to myself and to others. And every time you get a chance to wake up in the morning, you have to be grateful for the opportunity to do so. So continue to keep preparing, like I said, mentally and physically, to go out there and do the things that I do. But ultimately, as a team, we have a goal to do something special in this city. And that's, first off, get back to the playoffs. But not just get to the playoffs, actually go and win games in the playoffs. So it starts with one game, and it's this game right here.
Tyrod, JD is 39 yards away from 10,000.
Like, chasing 10K, chasing 10K.
How aware is the team? Are you guys, how special would that be to get up this weekend?
They were very aware. They were talking about it at halftime this past weekend. But, I mean, it's motivation for him to go out and continue to keep performing the way he's performing, as well as motivation to the offensive linemen. They want to see Shady, as well as we all want to see Shady, get to 10,000 yards, and we want to help him do it.
What's it say about his career and the longevity of being able to play as many games, especially the way the game's played now, where teams throw the ball, a lot of teams throw the ball 50 times, and that might not be the circumstance here.
He's a special talent. And it doesn't just take me to say that. I believe everyone on this team believes that. You guys believe it. And across the league, he's very well respected, and rightfully so. Every time he's had an opportunity to go out there and play ball, he's done it at a high level. I'm a fan of his, been a fan of his since Philadelphia days. Not necessarily Pittsburgh, but just joking. I've been a fan of his, and I'm going to continue to keep being a fan of his and watching him perform on Sundays.
So more quietly, Tyrod, the run game has crept back into the top 10 here now. Where do you feel is going right, and how might that benefit the passing game when it is going as well as it has been the last few weeks?
Oh, they definitely help each other, especially in our scheme. Of course, it's a balanced offense, but we definitely lean on the running game to open up our passing game. And over the past couple of weeks, it's just boiled down to execution. Early on in the season, it's been a couple of times where we were just one guy short here, lack of execution here. I think guys are just focused up and doing whatever it takes to get the job done.
Tyrod, when you were hurt, you were totally on the first play of the game on the Patriots game. I guess, how were you able to play for most of the rest of that game up until the fourth quarter? And something that got worse this time around that
they had
to go?
Yeah, off adrenaline. And the good Lord not making it worse. But I took a shot early in the fourth quarter, that first drive, and landed directly on the same spot that I fell on the first time. And my knee not to get into detail, but I didn't know what was going on, to be honest. So I talked to the trainers, and at that time, thought it was best to get it looked at. Move from there.
Did you think that it might have even been worse? I mean, you seem obviously, understandably, pretty dejected when you were being taken off the field.
First off, you never want to go off on the cart. As a competitor, you never want to come off the field. But like I said, I didn't know what was going on. I knew it hurt like crazy. Hurt like crazy the first time it happened for it. But before it happened two times, I didn't understand what was going on. And like I said, I agree with the trainers at the time. We needed to see what it was.
Tyrod Taylor meeting with the media just about an hour or so ago. And, you know, I forgot about that. We never really got the explanation from Tyrod what happened to his knee in the New England game. And it sounded like he was a little bit slightly alarmed, you know, bumped on the first play and then another shot later in the fourth quarter, he said.
When you're a player in this league, you know, with so much pressure on you from the team, from fans, from yourself, you know, from younger guys that are behind you, you know. When you're a player, you don't want to get hurt. You don't want to come off the field. You're such a competitor. To be at this level, you have to be the ultra competitor, you know. And there are some guys who are even more competitive than others in this league, right? So you don't want to come off the field at all. It's the worst thing in the world to have to sit on the sideline and watch your team, especially if your team loses a game or something like that. I remember being in high school in the playoffs, you know, and I had a high ankle sprain in high school in the playoffs, and I scored a touchdown And then this was right before half. It was probably 6 minutes left in the half. I score. Then they get the ball back. They score. And then we get it back. And I'm running. I get rolled up on, high ankle sprain. They come out in the second half and blow us out, you know. And I felt so bad, you know, on the sideline. I couldn't help the team. And you don't want to have to go out off on a cart or something right. like that. It's just the worst feeling in the world, you know. And so you feel like – and when it happens to you, when you get injured, you feel like, is this it? You know, what's going on? I don't know. It just hurts like crazy. I don't know what's going on. They're like, well, did you hear anything? Did you hear anything pop? You're like, I don't know. All I know is it hurts right now, you know. And I'm hoping, I'm praying that nothing is torn in there. It's nothing serious. I'll still be myself. Those are the thoughts that are going through your mind. And so that was probably what was going through his mind at the time.
You know, when Tyrod's tenure in Buffalo ends, whenever it is, I know many people believe this is it at the end of this year. Maybe it is. We thought the same thing last year. Mm-hmm. But whenever it ends, I think one of the things that'll have to be said about his tenure in Buffalo is that he's been pretty durable. Mm-hmm. He missed the two games early on, right, in his first year, about a month into that season. Could have played all 16 last year. Missed the one start this past week for injury purposes. I mean, he's been really pretty durable, which that's something. That's something, especially at the quarterback position in this league.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely been durable while he's been here, really. I mean, you talk about those two games early, his first year when he was here. Other than that, I mean, he's only missed one other game due to injury.
Yeah.
Everything else has been, you know, twice for being benched. But, yeah, I mean, the guy's been durable, especially for a quarterback that plays like he does.
Yeah.
You know, a guy who likes to run around and make plays outside the pocket. There is something to be said about a guy who comes to work every day, who works as hard as he does and is available usually on Sunday for you. You know, and that's a great thing, especially at the quarterback position.
Here's a call from Scott in Rochester. Go ahead, Scott. Welcome. You're on the show with us. Scott in Rochester.
Also, I want to shout out to Donald Jones. You were my favorite receiver when you were playing. You were awesome with your speed and everything.
Thank you, Scott.
But I was awesome. We traded for Kelvin Benjamin, and obviously he has a problem with his knee. But I was figuring, do you think we'll extend his contract?
Well, we don't have to. He has a contract already for next year, so he's all set. Thanks. Let's go to Brian in Hamburg. Hello, Brian.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Okay.
Good.
I love your show. I'm in my vehicle quite often in the afternoon and really enjoy it every day.
Thank you, Brian.
Calling for just two quick items. One is a compliment to Murph. This past Friday, you had mentioned that you thought your impact player of the game was going to be Shady, and that was before we even knew what the weather was going to be like. So you really nailed that one.
Yeah, get lucky. Actually, you could say that 16 times and probably be right.
This team goes with Shady.
Yeah,
that's true. But the other reason I was calling, I just wanted to get your opinion. I usually watch the games on TV with my brother, and every time that Mike Tolbert is handed the ball, we literally cringe. It's usually a one-yard gain, and he finally broke one a little bit during the snow, but then fumbled on it. But literally, every time Shady comes out, they hand the ball to Mike Tolbert, and it's a one-yard gain. Why do they keep doing this?
It's a good question. I thought they had found a good changeup back for Shady and Tarvarius Kadet, and I hope that they continue to go that way. I do think there's a role for Mike Tolbert to play, but I don't think he's been used in that role to much success this year.
Yeah, I think Mike Tolbert, for me, at this point in his career, with the things that he can do, he just needs to be the short yardage guy.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
that's the role. Don't pitch it outside to him. Don't even throw the ball really with him. I mean, you could surprise the team and throw it, you know, with him coming out of the backfield with one of those angle routes over the middle or something like that. But for me, it's just hand it to him like a fullback, you know, give him the ball on third and one, something like that, and let him pound it in there and pick up the first down. Tarvarius Kadet, to me, is the guy who's really the change-up back, the guy who can do a lot of different things for you, you know, and he's the guy who I feel like they need to continue to get the ball because he runs hard. I think he has the speed to break one. We haven't seen that yet, but he can also catch the ball out of the backfield. So you don't know what you're getting when you have him in the game. You put Mike Tolbert in the game, teams know, all right, if you pitch it outside, he doesn't have the speed to get out here, you know.
Right.
So he should be getting the ball up the middle And that's why you're seeing when he gets the ball, he's not really picking up that much yardage because teams know they have to give him the ball up the middle. You know, you can see what a guy has on film. And so for me, use him that way. Use Travaris Cadet to do everything else when Shady comes out of the game.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Sam is on the line. Hello, Sam. Welcome. Hello.
Hey, I'm glad you guys take my call, man. But I wanted to talk to you guys about Tyrod. You know, Tyrod, we know what we have, but we don't know what we're going to get. Now, we tried that with Peterman, and it didn't work out as well as we thought it was going to work out because we thought Peterman threw the ball when, you know, the timing was better with him when he threw the ball. He threw the ball before the guy turned into the full route, and that did not work out.
Mm-hmm.
And earlier on in the season and at the end of last year, Tyrod did not have all the weapons that he needed to play ball. Mm-hmm. Where was the tight end there? And then you had a end that you traded to the Rams that wasn't there in the game. And when he was in the game, there was production from Tyrod. And, you know, Tyrod is not calling the plays. And some of those plays, when they get down in the red zone, they should just be running north and south for the first two plays and then go to a pass. But they get in the red zone and one of the first things they want to do is go to a pass, and you know you got less room to work when you get down in the red zone.
Hmm.
So just talk back to me. I want to hear what you have to say
about Tyrod. Are you saying that Tyrod has not had a chance? Because I think that's hard to argue that after almost three full years as the Bills' starting quarterback. I think we have a pretty good handle on what you're getting from Tyrod Taylor, Donald. Don't you?
I agree. I mean, I've said it. We know who Tyrod is. The one thing that he said there was, you know, Tyrod, we know what we have, but we don't know what we're going to get.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure that out as he continued to talk, what he meant.
I don't know what that meant.
I think we all know who Tyrod Taylor is. We know what he brings to the table, his good things and his flaws. You know, we know what we're going to get from him. I just hope that, for me, we've always talked about it. It's the same things, you know, taking shots in certain points on the field, certain points of the game. And if Kelvin Benjamin is out there, locate him. If it's a one-on-one, throw him the ball. You know, that's my biggest thing with Tyrod. Obviously, you still need to be on time and all of that stuff. But for me, if Kelvin Benjamin is healthy enough to be in the game, throw him the ball. Force these teams to have to cover him, you know, or at least put somebody looking at him because that's going to open things up for everybody else.
Here's a call from John in Buffalo. Go ahead, John. You're on the air.
Hello. I was just calling to say it's a great show. I watch the show every day.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. Got some great guys. But I just wanted to know, I wasn't really, like, paying attention. Like, you think we could win a division in the next couple games or not?
Well, I mean, the Bills have to win out and the Patriots have to lose out, right? We know the Bills got the Dolphins twice and the Patriots get Pittsburgh, tough game for them.
And then the Bills.
And then the Bills, and then they finish against the Jets. I guess it's out there.
It's hard-pressed to think that the Patriots are going to lose out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when's the last time they lost three games in a row?
Right.
since Drew Bledsoe was their quarterback? Yeah. I don't know, you know, when the last time they actually lost three games in a row. I'm sure somebody will tweet us that stat. But, you know, I think, it could still happen, but that's not really what I think we're looking at right now. I think we're looking at the Bills need to win their games and hope that some other teams lose so that the Bills can get in that wild card spot.
Thanks for your call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, LeSean McCoy, the chase for 10,000. It is on, and it's 39 yards away. 10,000 career rushing yards. We'll hear what Shady had to say to the media after practice today when we come back. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Here we go. Here we go. Okay, here we go. I don't know. Look on me down. Thanks for coming back. Thanks for sticking with us today as we work our way through this Wednesday. Tyrod Taylor, full practice today. And that's a good sign, I think, to have him ready to go. There was some concern this week about who's going to play quarterback. Tyrod Taylor got in full practice day today. Nathan Peterman limited. Your comments and questions about the Bills, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Where do we want to go here? How about Adam in Saratoga Springs? Hello, Adam. Hi, Adam.
How are you?
Great.
Good.
Great. You know, I was listening to the show from yesterday, and I heard you talking to Trey from ESPN, talking about how Miami did a great job with New England in the way that they took away space from the wide receivers right off the line. Have you heard about any similar strategies coming from the press room or floating around? You know, I'm just interested to hear your comments on that strategy and others. I'll hang up and listen.
Last place to go would be the press room here, by the way. The phrase blown up or stuffed. No, I'm just kidding.
So he's talking about with the Patriots?
I think he's talking about what the Bills' strategy might be against the Dolphins' wide receivers.
I guess the Dolphins' wide receivers. Yeah. Okay, I mean, for me, yeah, you need to be physical with these Dolphins' wide receivers, especially with Jarvis Landry. He's one of the most physical receivers. Even though he's not that big in stature, he's still a physical dude, you know, and you gotta hit him. When he catches the ball, you got to hit him. I'm telling you, he's like a running back. Hit him.
Can I say this? You know where I'm going with this.
I know where you're going with this.
And you and Jordan, and I almost brought it up there, but Jordan wasn't here last year.
Yeah, yeah.
I still have a problem with Jarvis Landry and the hit that ended Aaron Williams' career.
Mm-hmm.
A cheap shot hit that he walked away from. Aaron Williams hasn't played since, hasn't played a down of football since. Anybody else got a problem with that? I got a problem with that hit. The guy's got 88 catches. He's second in receptions in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to put a gun to my head to get me to fill out a Pro Bowl ballot with Jarvis Landry's name on it, just because of that. I think that was an egregious, terrible, cheap shot hit by Landry last year.
You know,
I really do.
I think some people would argue and say, okay, now he actually, you know, leapt off his feet into Aaron Williams' head and neck area, you know. But some people would argue, well, Juju Smith-Schuster did the same thing, you know. And so it's such a gray area there with these hits. But that
Juju Smith-Schuster was involved in a play. That was nowhere near the play.
Yeah,
right?
See, I don't even remember where the play – I think wasn't Aaron coming down that way because the ball was coming that way? I don't remember
I
now.
I don't think it was. Maybe we can find that video.
Yeah, we can find that video.
Again,
but it was a tough hit. You know, I don't even know. Has he ever even said I'm sorry to Aaron Williams?
I don't know.
Anybody
I don't
know
think
that?
He has. No.
I mean, that's tough. You end a guy's career. You know, look, I understand. Look, we're playing football and all of that stuff. But I don't want to end somebody's career. I don't want to take money out of your pockets, out of your family's pockets. You know, I don't want to take money from your kids if you had kids. I never wanted to do something like that to a guy. You know, even if you made me mad on the field because you hit me or you just keep talking and talking, I don't want to injure you that way. You know, so – he should at least have apologized to Aaron Williams. For me, you know, it was a tough hit. I feel bad for Aaron Williams. I have no real, I guess, respect for the hit, you know, but I understand as a receiver what it's like when you line a guy up like that and he's coming down and he doesn't look at you and you're like, oh, man, this is my shot right here to take him out, you know. So it's hard to really even have that, you know, that those type of feelings, yeah, the ball was coming that way. Those type of feelings towards Jarvis Landry, just for me.
It was a high hit.
There was a high hit. You know, that's the one thing you say. He actually came off his feet right into his head, you know, and that right there you can't do. You're supposed to aim a little bit lower, and guys will say, well, I can't change my – well, you actually came high. Like, you actually came off your feet and came high
on
Aaron Williams.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's tough.
Unforgiven for that one. I don't think it's going to be a long time before I think anything different about Jarvis Landry. Here's Dave in Lewiston. Welcome, Dave.
Hey, how you doing, John? How you doing, Don?
Good.
Hey, question for Don. I guess you too, Murph. I grew up watching the Packers way back in the day in the 60s. And, man, they had this one play. It was just pulling guards and an end that was locked down. It was basically a Lombardi power. I'm just curious, would that work today? Because the Bills seem like they're tooled for a play like that, with the guys they have at the backfield.
Yeah, I'm having trouble understanding you, Dave, but I think you're talking about the famous Green Bay Packers sweep, the Packers sweep when two guards would pull to lead the way. Now, the Bills, the last couple of years, probably pulled guards as much as anybody in the league. They kind of got back to it a little bit this year. And I think more often, I'm not an expert on this at all, Donald, more often than not now, when there's offensive linemen pulling, typically it'll be a guard and a center from the same side who kind of pull. But back then it was two guards.
Yeah, so you had the two guards pulling on the sweep. And, you know, it's so hard because of the talent coming up from college. Once again, we always talk about this talent coming out of college now, you know, and these kids are talented, but it takes them a while
to be able to learn how to pull and how to block in space and all of that stuff, because they're just not doing it down at that level in college anymore. You know, everything is just wide open, you know, and you just block the guy that you block. But once you get here and you have to pull sometimes, you got to hit a corner or safety or linebacker in space, it's harder for these guys to get that done. I think, yeah, you can still run things like that. I don't know how many teams you actually see run it.
Yeah, you don't
see that. You don't see that many teams running plays like that, like old school football like that. The Bills probably the most recent that I can remember, especially back to last year and the power schemes with Richie and those guys pulling and all that stuff. But I wouldn't say it wouldn't work. You know, you just got to have the right personnel to be able to get that done.
They got a good running back to get it done, and the guy that they're going to give the ball to this week, LeSean McCoy, is just 39 yards away from the 10,000-yard mark for his career. Shady talked about it today when he met the media last hour, reflecting on the chase for 10,000 rushing yards.
I mean, it's hard to really look at my career right now because we're kind of still in the playoff hunt. You know, we need big wins, you know, to have a shot. So I think after the season, I could really reflect and look at my career and the 10,000-yard mark passing that. So, I mean, it'll happen. You know, and then I have my time and my family. We could talk about it and enjoy it. My teammates that have helped me get to this point. Well, I think right now just the most important thing is to get a win, you know.
That Miami defense get your attention the other night? I assume you watched that patch.
No, they look good. I mean, they have – if you look at this on the paper and look at the names on the roster, they're a solid group. You know, there's times where they get out of place or there's times when, you know, if the game's not going well for them, at some place they may take off, but – when they're rolling, they're rolling. I mean, Sue, he gets that thing going. We got Wake. We got a couple players, even in the back end. You know, Rashad, and he makes plays, and then McDonald just came back. So they got some weapons on defense. They're aggressive group, and they're athletic. You know, a lot of talent.
Tyrod said that you guys talked about it at halftime last week, possibly getting you to 10,000 in that game. Is that sort of a reflection of how well you thought you guys were doing running the ball and maybe, you know, wanting to do it even more in the second half?
Yeah, well, I wasn't around for them talks. I wish I was. A couple of plays I could have, I guess, ran different, you know, made a different cut. The long one I should have scored, you know, but I didn't make the right cut. I could have passed it there. But it was a good game. We won. We ran the ball well in the conditions that, I guess, was terrible, you know. But guys up front, they had fun blocking, and I ran well, so we got the W. But like I said, it'll come. I'll get the 10K for sure. Hopefully it's this game, you know, with a W. That's the most important part.
Are you keeping an eye on the forecast and kind of hoping for, I don't know, about a repeat or maybe something similar, though?
I guess so. I guess I have the advantage, you know, but whatever the weather is, you know, we need to win. You know, we need to run the ball well. The games that they have lost, the opposing team has ran the ball really well. That's something that shows up, you know. So that type of team, and they play with confidence. So we want to jump on them early. That way we'll have the advantage.
I know your goal is beyond 10K, but when you started in Philly first year, first game, did you ever envision to be on the cusp of 10,000 yards?
No, I just wanted to, man. I remember just 20 years old, was getting to NFL, being around guys like Brian Westbrook, Donovan McNabb, Andy Reid. I was just happy to be there. Then getting cool with DeSean Jackson, seeing what type of talent he was. Then we got Michael Vick. So it's just, I was just happy to be a part of it. You know, Asante Samuels, you know, a lot of guys I played with that are big names. Then as I got better and things kept going well for me, you know, I started feeling, hey, I could be good in this league, and maybe someday, you know, guys could be comes to NFL talking about me like I talked about them guys. And as the years got rolling, that's when I could kind of see it, you know. And then like now, like even now, 10,000 is something I want to do, but the main goal is I want to get 12. I want to get 12, surpass 12,000. That would be nice for me.
Do you remember your first carry in the NFL?
No, but I remember my first touchdown, and I remember my first bad play. I told Nate this story. We were going to score. We were on, like, the 2-yard line, 3-yard line, and we've been practicing this play all week. It was like a fake run pass, right? and Manette was quarterback. We ran it, and as I'm running to catch it, I lost the ball in the light, and the ball hit me in the back of my helmet, and the defender picked it up and ran it all the way back for touchdown. That's embarrassing, you know? And I was telling Nate that, and look at me now. So the 5 picks, don't even worry about it. You know, Philadelphia, as a rookie doing that, I mean, you go to a restaurant, they probably won't serve you. You know what I mean? So those are one of the stories that I always remember, that one. And then my first touchdown against the Chiefs, scored a Wildcat. You know, Tamba Ali hit me. Boom, I got hit, spent out, and scored. You remember that, Wiggo? So those are two plays I always remember.
You heard from Thurman? Do you feel like the run game has kind of rounded into form here the last 2 or 3 weeks? You guys have crept back into the top 10. Do you feel like the run game has met, is that the consistency, or at least close to where you guys expected it to be maybe at the outset of this?
Yeah, I don't think we're there yet, you know, but with this guy, with the guys up front and the running schemes, you know, you can never count us out. You know, the guys in the backfield, we can make plays, and then the guys up front, they get on their blocks. Anything can happen. We can get rolling. And I think a lot of teams know that. And then you got our quarterback who is talented. He can run, he can throw. So, I mean, teams know that we want to run the ball. That's the first thing they want to take out. Let's get the running game. Let's take that out. So, you read all the interviews they have or all the quotes. It's always how to stop the run game, you know, take me out the game. So, but we know that. Just got to make adjustments. You know, once we get the running game going, I think the game changes. You know, with the play actions and things like that.
He's right about that, LeSean Shady McCoy. Yeah, the Bills' 6th ranked rushing attack in the NFL now, which is, it's come a long way.
That's crazy,
I
right?
mean, you rack up all those yards last week, obviously.
But
6th best in the league at running the football.
It's really crazy because they had so many games in the first half of the season where it was like, where is this rushing game?
Yeah.
You know, so now when you look at them in their 6th, and just the fact that he's up there himself is like, wow, is the rest of the league bad in running? Or
no.
Or have the Bills really turned the corner and now coming on in the running game?
Yeah, it's been slow to come around, but it has come around. Hey, an answer you were asking earlier, I think last segment, about Patriots, a caller asked about Patriots losing out. A pretty good listener, Michael Vasquez, tweets in, losing out for the Patriots would have them losing 4 games in a row, because obviously they just lost Monday. Mm-hmm. Very doubtful unless Brady gets hurt. And he goes on to say, Brady has never lost 4 in a row. He lost 3 in a row in 2002. Answering your question.
Gotcha.
So, unlikely.
Unlikely.
We're back in a minute. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had the Hall of Famer Thurman Thomas in studio with us today, and he talked about LeSean McCoy's performance in the snow this past Sunday.
He doesn't have like that long stride. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Eric Dickerson could have played in something like that. Yeah. He had a longer stride. LeSean has a short stride, but he can plant and go. And he, a defender in front, he knows what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. That defender does not have an idea which way he's going. So he's able to sit and cut, and he has such great balance.
Yeah.
Man, his balance is unbelievable. I mean, the play that he jumped over the guy, I mean, it was no farther than from here
I'm
to
telling
here.
You, yeah.
And he planted and jumped and to keep his body still going in motion as he hit the ground. Man, that was that's something.
Herman Thomas talking about LeSean McCoy, one Hall of Famer, marveling at the work of another pretty good running back. Jordan Poyer joined us on the set after practice today. The Bills safety, who's been named the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award. And Jordan Poyer talked about coming back from the lacerated kidney that he suffered playing football last year for the Cleveland Browns.
I definitely feel honored. I feel very honored to be recognized by my peers and my teammates, man. It was a crazy, crazy season last year with the way everything happened, but I definitely feel very blessed to be in the position that I'm in to be here and play for this football team.
Jordan Poyer, we wish him well. He is the Bills nominee for the Ed Block Courage Award. Our Twitter poll today, which new Bills player will have the biggest impact down the stretch, these three remaining games? In a poll of you on Twitter, 58% of you say you think it'll be Kelvin Benjamin. 28% said you think it'll be Matt Milano. 7% say Deontay Thompson. 6% had somebody else in mind as far as the player who will have the biggest impact moving forward for the Buffalo Bills. Well, I hope, Donald, that Kelvin Benjamin gets a chance to have an impact this week. He is on the Bills injury report this week, however, and we'll see how that goes along. I have a feeling, having talked to him Sunday in the locker room, that he's probably going to be okay, but, you know, nothing is certain about that just yet.
Yeah, nothing is certain. You know, he has to go through the week, and hopefully he can get through this week and feel a lot better on Sunday. Yeah. You know, I would think this is really a pain management thing for him, you know, how he feels on Sunday. And that's going to be something that we have to wait and see. But having him on the field, is he's a difference maker. And the fact that they just shown that in this past game that they'll throw it to him. Now, you know, Tyrod has to do the same thing. But when he's out there, you get him the ball, it forces teams to pay attention to him. And that way, he's a factor in my eyes.
And Tyrod is the big news on the Bills injury report today. The Bills quarterback, a full participant in practice, which is good, as he did not play last week. Nathan Peterman remains in concussion protocol, and he was limited today. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. Good show tomorrow. Make sure you join us then. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.